Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the RIF concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the RIF banner on your Windows Media Player.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. We're here for the next couple of hours taking your phone calls at 313-298-WRIF. Welcome to everyone in our immediate WRIF listening audience. And to those of you all around the country and all around the world listening on the World Wide Web. And, yeah, by the way, happy holidays and season's greetings. And what else they say? Season cheer or something like that. You'll notice, you know, as I'm weighing right in on this, these right-wing Christian wackos. I mean, actually, I guess that's what they are. I mean, they're boycotting Walmart because Walmart, in its store, says that it says happy holidays. And they're all PO'd at Bush because Bush, the Bush family, sent out Christmas cards. And holiday cards, holiday greeting cards, no less, that said, happy holidays. And it even had a biblical quote, but it was from the Old Testament. All right, so what's up with that? So these right-wing Christian wackos are contending that both Christmas and Christianity is under furious assault by secularism and the left and all of this. I mean, they always have to pose themselves as these victims, this threatened minority. They are a minority, these right-wing Christian wackos. But they've hijacked the entire system. So they can pretend like they're embattled. Even though, what, Christians are, about 80% of the people in the country identify themselves as Christians. There's churches everywhere. There's God stuff on the money, and there's God in the Pledge of Allegiance and all of this. I mean, it's all done. I mean, it's really, I don't know. What is it? I was going to say it's all done for political purposes to divert us from considering what's really important to us socially and politically and economically. But they truly are wacks. Wackos. Not like W-A-X. Like wacks. Like W-H-A-C-K-S. They're totally wacko, and they have this public forum. I mean, that's it's absurd. I mean, I don't even begrudge them doing all this, except that they get such prominence. I mean, they should just go around and everybody and say, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. And they ought to put it on their doors and stuff like that. But you know, there's really two holidays. There is a religious observance of the birth of the Christian God's son and his sacrifice. Well, this is his birth date, right? Actually, it was the birth date of Mithra, this Iranian god, but what the hell? They hijacked almost everything. I mean, I'm going to get too far afield with this. But here, Pope Benedict warned Sunday against rampant materialism, which he said was polluting the spirit of Christmas. In today's consumer society, this time of the year, unfortunately, suffers from a sort of commercialism that threatens to alter its real spirit, he told this crowd in Rome. He said Christmas should be marked with sober celebrations and urged Christians to display a nativity scene in their houses as, quote, a simple but effective way of showing their faith and conveying it to their children. All right. I mean, doesn't that make sense? That's the religious part of it. So why are these nutballs insisting that stores that are essentially the distribution operation for China? I mean, like Walmart, that's what it is. It's the distribution center for Chinese goods. That they should say Merry Christmas. I mean, what about what the Pope says? Well, they don't like the Pope either, a lot of these folks. Hey, speaking of that, there's not going to be a Night Call show on Christmas Day, which is the 25th, or New Year's Day. So we'll have a show next week and then 2 weeks off. And then I'll do two shows, and then I'm going, I told you that, and I'm going to Venezuela for the World Social Forum, so I'm going to miss 2 weeks there as well. Although I'll have some recorded interviews. What would it be? I think it'll be the 22nd and the 29th of January. So, I don't know. So I don't care. I mean, people often wish me Merry Christmas, and I say, I don't know, what do I usually say? Thank you. That's what I say. Or I say happy holidays, because there's also a secular civic holiday as well, where there's good cheer, and there's gift-giving, and families come together. None of this has anything to do with the birth of Christ. I mean, again, this is all pagan stuff. The tree is pagan, the Yule log is pagan, the gift-giving is pagan, or Roman Saturnalia, and all of that. And most of you know the story, how all of this was adapted and adopted to make it more palatable and competitive to the great number of religions that existed around that time. Good movie to see about all of that is The Life of Brian by Monty Python. Should be able to pick that up pretty easily. Now, so, and I'm not a Christian, I'm not religious at all, so it doesn't make much sense for me to say Merry Christmas, and I will not do it at all. I mean, actually, what I used to say, depending on the person, if somebody, an older person or somebody I really respected, or I didn't want them to think it was weird, if they said Merry Christmas to me, I'd say Merry Christmas to them. But now, like always, these right-wing Christian wackos are trying to shove everything down everyone else's throat. So I wouldn't, those words will never leave my lips again. I'll never utter them again. Or did I say it a little earlier? I mean, as a greeting. So I'm not going to greet you. If you want to call up and say Merry Christmas, fine. I'll say thank you. I may say Happy Holidays, or why do I keep thinking of the season's greetings like that? And that's, in many ways, that even more so denotes the civic secular holiday. Because we don't work as much, we have big parties, all of that. And also, season's greetings or Happy Holidays doesn't mean Kwanzaa, doesn't mean Hanukkah, doesn't mean... What? I forgot even the pagan holiday. Well, I mean, it's the winter solstice. In fact, the winter solstice is extraordinarily important because, of course, it marks the end of the dark and the beginning of the light. It's the shortest day of the year, and so it's really a great metaphor for what's going on now in this country, in the world. We're leaving the dark and entering the light again. Wouldn't that be nice? So, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but... These people, I mean, they're always causing trouble. That occur to you that these guys are always, they're just so toxic to the body politic. I mean, you can't discuss things on a level that doesn't right away them turn into denouncing someone as destroying Christmas or being traitors or what have you. And these people have always been around, but. As I said earlier, suddenly they're front and center, and they're given these megaphones, and they have shows, and why don't they just relax? I don't think they know the meaning of the word. This is a Night Call show. I'm Peter Werbe, and the phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to email me, I'd like to hear from you as well, in which you can say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas or nothing at all, and call talk yes. At yahoo.com. Call talk yes at yahoo.com is the email here. And take a look at my website. Actually, I was, I'm not selling anything, so that's all right. But that reminds me of something else about Christmas. What does it say here? Peace on earth, happy holidays to all. And, oh, yeah, that's what I want to talk about, too. It says, forget the malls, give peace and social justice gifts. See below right, which is the Syracuse culture workers. Or cultural workers, where you can get all kind of calendars and greeting cards and stuff like that. Yeah, it says, don't go to Hallmark, get cards, calendars, and gifts for the coming year from the Syracuse cultural workers. So you get a gift out of it, and it goes for a good cause. And also, I've got a page of peace and social justice paraphernalia and also a books page. And so, I mean, some people you're probably going to get some nice stuff for. So maybe like an iPod or... I don't even know what. I mean, I don't want anything. Did anybody get me anything? Not yet. But anyway, I get very little gifts. I mean, my wife and I don't give very many gifts, so you don't get many. And part of it is because what we do and what we've told people in our lives is what we'd prefer is that you would give a donation to some group that's doing good stuff. Like I just sent some money off to the Sea Shepherds Conservation Society. Captain Paul Watson and the folks that are protecting the sea from the people that are doing everything in their power to destroy it for future generations. Or Food Not Bombs. You can go to foodnotbombs.net. I mean, groups like that. So I write a note we have made a donation in your name to Food Not Bombs or Sea Shepherds or something like that. So that's another deal. And also, most people think about, I mean, I can't remember, well, here I can do a big click on it real quickly. Oh, yeah, my website, Peter Werbe. That's W-E-R-B-E, PeterWerbe.com. And, yeah, all right. So, I don't know. I mean, you don't always have to have real light stuff, do you? But here, the JFK book that we interviewed the authors about, Ultimate Sacrifice, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for a Coup in Cuba, and the Murder of JFK. I don't know. Maybe that's too serious. But there's other stuff there as well, including, isn't there a book? Oh, yeah, a book called Intoxication. Very cool book. We interviewed that author. Wild Fermentation, that's what it's called. Everything from beer to kimchi. Kimchi is that kind of fermented, spicy cabbage that the Koreans serve you with their food. So there's tons of stuff. And the point being, I guess I kind of drifting here. How unusual, huh? Is that you may have something very specific to give to people in your life that you know they'll want. And that's cool. I'm not arguing with that. But I'm saying if you're thinking, oh, well, I'll get him a handkerchief or one of those things, you can do better. The other thing on my website, peterwerbe.com, is this incredible interview with John Lennon called Power to the People. And in a wonderful photograph of John and Yoko Ono. And, all right, well, I'm losing it now. What is it, 24 years or is it 25 years since the assassination of John Lennon? Yeah. All right, if you'd like to call up 313-298-WRIF, welcome to everybody that's participating in the Tom Hartman chat room, listening here. Now, there is the beginning of what the headlines are all calling a historic juncture in Iraq. There's a vote set, I mean, set by the occupiers, that's us. Voting begins Monday in hospitals, military camps, and even prisons across Iraq, launching the process to choose a new parliament that the United States hopes can help quell the insurgency so U.S. forces can begin heading home. That's a great idea, that they head home. And almost everybody agrees. Bush keeps talking about victory, but they're looking for ways to get out of there quickly. So while they're denouncing or anybody who dares to criticize the war or said maybe we ought to think about an exit plan before we kill too many more thousands of people and we lose hundreds and hundreds of more Americans and spend tens of billions more of our fortune that we can't afford. More on that later. Maybe we ought to get out of there. So it's phony. I mean, the whole Bush thing about victory and having a plan, they don't have any plan at all. They just want to, how can they get out there without looking like we've lost another war like Vietnam? In the meantime, people that are daring to say, maybe we should take a look at this. Yeah, I mean, this guy, John Murtha from Pennsylvania, who was the decorated Marine war hero from Vietnam. When he said that there ought to be withdrawal, then these scumball Republicans start calling him a coward. Imagine that. And worse, Michael Reagan, who's the son of the late president, blasted Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean for declaring that the U.S. won't be able to win the war in Iraq, saying Dean ought to be hung for treason. See, this is the fascist mentality of these people. It's not like, gee, I don't agree with that statement. I think we can. I think we can triumph there because all we got to do is just kill thousands, tens of thousands of more people and spend another few hundred billion dollars and we'll win. We'll have complete victory. That's the or whatever. I mean, I'm being facetious, but if, say you put it in terms that didn't quite sound like that. Now, here's what he told his audience. Howard Dean should be arrested and hung for treason or put in a hole until the end of the Iraq war. Critics should be executed. I mean, if that's not fascism, I don't know what is. Am I calling it wrong? I mean, you shouldn't be calling everyone a fascist who doesn't agree with you, but when you start saying that critics of the government, of government policy, should be executed by the state, what the hell else is it? He was reacting to Dean's comments earlier in the day when the top Democrat said that the idea that we're going to win the war in Iraq is an idea which is just plain wrong. So this is the statement. So horrible. In fact, well, let me use the language of another guy who I will not give him space even to give his name. But he was on Foxhole News, as we call it here. Foxhole News is Fox and Friends, And I guess it's hosted by somebody who I never heard before, and I can't even find it. Brian Kilmeade. Kilmeade. Is that how you say his name? Wow. He said that, so this radio talk show host, another one, said that Howard Dean ought to be kicked out of America, tried for treason. And the host, Brian Kilmeade, said, absolutely. So when you criticize this policy that the majority, in fact, the vast majority of American people, A, think is wrongheaded, and a majority think that Bush lied to get us into, that you're a traitor and you should be hung, kicked out of the United States, and arrested. And this talk show host went on to state that Dean, quote, is the enemy. This is the head of the Democrats. These people want every boy to die. They're bloodthirsty animals. Howard Dean is a vile human being. The guy is bloodthirsty. What am I missing here? Dean, Murtha, me, the majority of American people want to disengage so we don't hear every day like we did today. 4 in 5 Americans were killed, and we don't even hear the reports about how many Iraqis are killed, how many cities are destroyed and all that. So if you say you don't want war, see, this is the way these people who are so crazy stand everything on their head. If you don't want war, you're bloodthirsty. And if you do want war, I don't know what. And if you say, I think the government's wrong, these people want to execute you. Extraordinarily frightening people. Extraordinarily frightening people. And in terms of personalities, there's democratic personalities with a small d, and there is authoritarian personalities. And authoritarian personalities are the fodder of fascism. And that's what these people would like to do, because or are they just talking? Is it just blather and bluster? They don't mean a thing they say. They know they can get in the paper. I don't think so. I think they really believe it. Here's what this awful man, Howard Dean, said. This is what he should be executed for. He said, I've seen this before in my life. This is the same situation we had in Vietnam. Everybody then kept saying, just another year, just stay the course, we'll have a victory. Well, we didn't have a victory, and this policy cost the lives of an additional 25,000 troops because we were too stubborn to recognize what was happening. That's pretty terrible, isn't it? Here's also what he said. I think we need a strategic redeployment over a period of 2 years. Bring the 80,000 National Guard and Reserve troops home immediately. They don't belong in a conflict like this anyway. We ought to have a redeployment to Afghanistan of 20,000 troops. So he wants to send more troops overseas. And he says, right now, we've got to get the target off the backs of the American troops. In fact, the vast majority of what's going on, although there is a civil war of sorts going on, is attacks on American soldiers and attacks on Iraqis that support American soldiers. So it would stand to reason that if we followed Howard Dean's advice, a lot of that would diminish. I mean, is there going to be a civil war if and when we leave, whenever we do? Well, very possible. Bush set the context for that, so there's no guaranteeing there won't be. But for saying that, there ought to be a strategic redeployment. They ought to take 80,000 National Guard troops and reserve troops home immediately. These people who believe and support our oops, not support our troops, people that supported the troops who want to bring them home in the majority, these guys want to support our oops no matter how many more people are killed, American and Iraqis, no matter how much more money is spent. So for saying that, these people are saying they ought to be tried for treason and hung. Are they frightening or what? I mean, who's out of the mainstream? What are these guys doing getting national attention like this? I mean, there's always Nazis among us, and they have these little compounds, and they dream about killing everybody and killing Jews and blacks and Asians and Catholics and or whoever else, everybody, all their enemies. And maybe it's good they have these little compounds. Well, can't we get these guys on little compounds, too, so they can get their toxicity out of the mainstream body politic? Wouldn't that be great? Any of your comments are welcome on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werbe here with you. Hey, what commie said this? This is apropos. I believe, and this is strong words, I believe that if we had and would keep our dirty, bloody, dollar-soaked fingers out of the business of these nations so full of depressed, exploited people, they'll arrive at a situation of their own. And if unfortunately their revolution must be of the violent type, because the haves refuse to share with the have-nots by any peaceful method, at least what they get will be their own and not the American style, which they don't want and, above all, don't want crammed down their throats by Americans. Whoa. What commie said that? What anti-American person would say something like that? Maybe, certainly. I mean, think about that. Think about how provocative that statement is compared to Howard Dean's. And these right-wing Republican nuts are advocating treason and execution for Howard Dean, who says we must redeploy the troops. Well, it turns out it was General David M. Shoup, who was commander of the U.S. Marine Corps between 1960 and 1963. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor for World War II heroism, and he said it in 1966. Think about that. By the way, it's come out more and more, this whole torture thing, now that Bushko has shoved us into being a disgraced torture state. The Bush administration based a crucial pre-war assertion about ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda on detailed statements made by a prisoner who was in Egyptian custody, who as soon as he got out of there said he made them up to escape torture. Oh, man. And so because of this war, because of torture, because of Abu Ghraib, because of what's being done in Iraq, we now have this enormous military propaganda machine. Mobile trailers with high-tech gear, television outlets, everything under the sun. A 1,200-strong psychological operations unit based at Fort Bragg and its purpose is to bring so-called truthful messages to support the United States government's objectives, to get the message out to Muslims across the world that everything you see about Abu Ghraib and the illegal and unnecessary invasion of Iraq and 100 other things like that really isn't so. We're really good guys. We're really good guys. And I'm always bashing right-wingers. And let me see, where is this? Ben wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And he said, I'm a regular listener, big fan. I'm a liberal person and agree with many of the things you say. Often right-wing people on your show. And then he begins to say that we ought to maybe understand that they've, I'm not trying to excuse, he has quite a long thing, I'm trying to excuse right-wing people, just trying to humanize them a little for you. I wrote back, hey, hi, Ben, you're nicer than I am, but I suspect too nice in essentially letting compassionless people off the hook for their intolerance, greed, compulsions, uncritical submission to authority, and host of other extremely negative character traits stemming from their unresolved rage and fear. You didn't know I was a psychologist, did you? I know and even work with right-wingers, some well-known DJs who will go unnamed, who are pleasant and friendly at work. But when it comes to social and political decisions, they're all for wealth, war, and privilege. All right, just one other thing, and let me get you guys on the air. And I don't mean that gender specifically, like everybody to call in, 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werbe here with you on Night Call. This is happening all around the country, but my sister, who works in another city at a school, said there was a shooting in her school. There have been a couple over the last week here in Detroit, and also other crimes in the city. And it's not unusual. I mean, they're almost always in poor schools because this may be a shock to some sociologists that are always trying to figure out why there is crime, but it's poverty. The more poverty you have, the more crimes you have. I mean, certainly the big crimes are done by the guys in the $2,000 suits at the top of everything and really set the context for the smaller crimes. But as people traveling through the world, traveling through our cities, we're concerned about somebody mugging us or carjacking us while we're driving or shooting one of our kids in school. And that's pretty understandable. But we should realize the more that wealth is distributed unequally, as it is in this country to such a degree, and we have such an enormous amount of poverty, well, that's going to bring up a lot of stuff like shootings and robberies and, the rest. And the way we try to do it is with a huge police apparatus, including in our schools. But let's just take it a little back to these speeches, these victory speeches of Bush. He defended his war policy on Wednesday, said Iraq is making quiet, steady progress in repairing its shattered economy through reconstruction. And most of what he said, I know you go to some websites and see, the most of what he said is debunked. I mean, as usual, he's talking, so he's lying. He says, rebuilding a nation devastated by a dictator is a large undertaking. Am I incorrect, or did the United States devastate the Iraq? I mean, whether he deserved it or not, Saddam Hussein had a thriving economy and one of the most, what would you call it? I can't think of that. What word? Thriving, you know, it was, times were good all during the 1980s. And after the U.S. Invaded in the early 90s and the sanctions and this latest invasion, well, all right. So even whether you think he deserved it or not, it wasn't devastated by Saddam Hussein. Bush says the U.S. has helped Iraqis. Now, keep this thing, school shootings, in your mind. The U.S. has helped Iraqis conduct nearly 3,000 renovation projects at schools, train more than 30,000 teachers, distribute more than 8 million textbooks, rebuild irrigation infrastructure to help more than 400,000 rural Iraqis, and improve drinking water for more than 3 million people. I mean, we owe them something. I mean, gee. We were the ones who were doing all the bombing. But 3,000 renovation projects at schools. The U.S. coalition has also helped Iraqis introduce a new currency, reopen a stock. All right. So here, we are spending all of our money on Iraq because they do want to try to pull out. I mean, right now, I mean, I don't even know if they're on about oil. They just don't want, they being the conservatives and the right-wingers and the Republicans, they don't want a loss on their hands. They want to have victory, and they're willing to expend any number of lives and any amount of money because it's not theirs. It's ours. And here, front page of the Detroit News, schools cut 24% of guards. Detroit's district's ailing budget means fewer security staff as shootings raise safety fears. Do you think? Detroit Public Schools has cut about 100 security guards in the past 18 months despite union pleas that crime was rising and forces were stretched too thin. Security forces stretched too thin. Boy, that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? They're stretched too thin in Iraq, our troops. We don't have enough to control the insurgency. And they're stretched too thin here in Detroit to secure our schools so the kids don't get shot, which isn't funny at all. My slip was. The cuts, which represent a 24% drop in staff, came largely because of the district's loss of students and a $200 million budget deficit. Well, I wonder, since there's 3,000 renovation projects at Iraq schools, and there's more than 30,000 Iraqi teachers trained, and 8 million textbooks were distributed, all of us that we paid, and again, I think we owe these folks something, but I know teachers that are in the inner city schools of Detroit, and you may know them in the cities you're listening to, and even not in the inner cities, where the teachers buy kids textbooks because there's not enough. That's how bad things are. I knew one teacher that wound up spending almost $5,000 a year on material and did it for a few years and then said, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. And she felt awful about it as well. All right, let's go to our phones. Your turn now. Night Call is the program. My name's Peter Werbe, 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to email, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And let's go to Rocky. Hey, Rocky, where are you calling from?
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Hi.
Good to hear from you. Listen, I just got to tell you something, and I can't believe you're even on the riff doing this. I'm very upset that you could get on here with your political...
Oh, wait. We're Rocky. Settle down, my man. Just settle way down. It's okay. Tell me what you want to say.
And you're not letting the people talk.
Wait, Rocky. You know, they don't pay me enough to have someone shout at me, so calm down. Unless, this isn't how you... Do you talk to people in your daily life, like your family and your friends and your coworkers, when you don't agree with them like this?
Listen, I certainly do.
Whoa, man, you must not have a lot of friends.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm a Republican. My children are at home safe. They go to a safe school.
Are you a rich man?
Biological bombs. They don't have to worry about actually airplanes anymore. Thank God that
what,
we
don't what are you
that
what are you talking about, Rocky? What the hell are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
Yeah,
I'm talking about my president and what he did.
What he did? You mean this guy that started this war based on a pack of lies and has put us more at risk because he's created so many people all around the country? We lost almost 3,000 people on 9/11. Now he's set up almost 3,000 of our sons and fathers and community members in this war that never had to be fought. He's created a second 9/11, and he was responsible for the first 9/11.
Peter, let me tell you something. My father, 82nd Airborne, was in Korea. I am a Vietnam veteran. We know exactly what war is. War is not starting at home and coming out and starting problems with people. War is in this place, seeing these people, exactly what they are, what they stand for, and how much they hate us. They want to come to our shores.
Well, wait a minute. Why? Any idea why they hate us?
We will buy your oil. We will buy your goods. But don't come here and don't slam into our buildings and hate us.
Well, wait a minute. The people that slammed into our buildings, you may have forgotten, Rocky, were from our ally, Saudi Arabia. Nobody from Iraq was involved in that.
Pardon me? You don't think Iraq was involved in that?
Wait a minute. What makes you think? Bush said they weren't involved. The 9/11 Commission said there wasn't. What information do you have that the rest of us don't have?
Okay, that's another Democratic setup. That's fine. You know what? They should now start to introduce some of these things that they say they're going to do they haven't done yet. I agree with you.
Okay.
But here's the real deal. When they're slamming our airplanes with our children and our brothers and sisters, people, into our own buildings, and you think we're going to just stand there?
Well, why didn't we attack Saudi Arabia? Because that's where all the people were from.
Great example of us just sitting around doing nothing.
All right, thank you, Rocky. I appreciate it. I'm not sure what you're talking about exactly, but you gave it a good shot, I guess. Here is Mike from Westland. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Your last caller was a perfect example of a graduate student from the Fox viewing station.
Foxhole.
Amongst other media representatives of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
He was quite amusing, and I could not think of a clearer example of what is wrong with this country than your last speaker.
Why do you say that? Yeah, why do you say that?
Why do I say that? It's because he's obviously a product of misinformation, disinformation, and he gave you examples, Peter, of not knowing whom crashed into the towers of 9/11.
Yeah, right.
You asked him that, and he failed to respond because he didn't know.
You know, that's interesting, Mike, because I thought by now, I mean, it's pretty clear that even Bush has said that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, that it had no connection to Al-Qaeda, that all of his investigators that were over there found no weapons of mass destruction. You still find these people that will come up with this cockamamie, as you said, misinformation and disinformation.
Peter, this is the crust of the problem. Callers that were previously on the phone before me are misinformed, are disinformed by the media, by not evolving their thinking to the end, and not really looking for the truth.
Don't you think, Mike, I've used this phrase so many times, I actually stole it from from Noam Chomsky, who said it's willful ignorance. I mean, all the information is there.
Well, it is to a point, but maybe some people don't have the ability to analyze all the different fragments of a problem and come to a proper conclusion.
No. I mean, all you have to do is watch television or read the newspapers.
Well, Peter, you mentioned that your friend that spent $5,000 on some educational books
Yeah.
That's a part of the problem too. Is we are not the best educated society in the country, in the world.
No, and getting worse and worse, unfortunately. And unfortunately, Mike, I got to go to my break. Thank you. I appreciate it. If you want to get a hold of it, 313-298-WRIF.
This is listening WRIF.com. Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919. 101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents. Residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
This is WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 482-220.
those finger curls and get ready. Buttball 2006 awaits, along with those awesome 37-inch plasma screen TVs, just in time to watch the game.
He hooks it perfectly. Has it got the distance? Yes, it's gone!
The Budweiser Flick Football Tournament. Listen for your chances to win with 101 WRIF The Riff.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. 313-298-WRIF. I began the show by saying it is season's greetings and happy holidays from me, and that there are two holidays, essentially. One is a secular civic holiday, which I celebrate, and pleased that this time of the year is there, which includes New Year's as well. Some people say, yeah, I always suspect that there is this subtle, I mean, Christianity dominates this culture in terms of religion. So why would anybody care if they didn't say happy holidays? I think they think they're giving too much to the Jews, too much to the blacks with Kwanzaa. That's what it's all about, I think. I think that's a real heavy part of it. It's one of these subtle sort of subtexts that is going on. Or they're just totally crazy. That's another thing as well. Paul from Detroit wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Reasons greetings, Peter. I like that. Reasons greetings. Happy solstice season. That's the way atheists such as myself greet people after the befuddled looks and general miasma of confusion. I get to explain to them that a celebration of this season predates the unprovable Jesus by more than 2,900 years at least. Keep up the good work. Sandy writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Wow, I didn't know your show existed. Finally, a voice for real people. I'm so sick of religious zealots. I'm always arguing with people about their positions and beliefs. It's good to hear someone like you take them on. Yeah, sure. Glad to do it. Said to that one guy. What was his name? I forgot. They didn't pay me enough to have somebody yell at me, but, yeah, I get paid enough to say all that. I've tried honest work. Believe me, folks. Can't do it. Robert from Port Huron says he begins a new job at Imlay City. The plant is a division of some or other. Excuse me. Anyway, from corporate headquarters came in an order for all employees to become tobacco-free by January 2007. He doesn't smoke, doesn't affect him, but he does know people who do smoke. In other words, the company will not hire anyone who uses tobacco products, or will fire people who do not quit using tobacco. What are they going to do, test them? I figure this policy goes a little too far. I see it's designed to save the company money on health care costs and or lost productivity, which is true. Smokers are ill more, and they get sick more. I was at breakfast today at a place I go to in Ferndale sometimes, and right next to us, this table is two couples, probably in their late 20s, smoking away. I mean, it's all drifting over my face and trying to enjoy my eggs, or what was it? Yeah, eggs Florentine, if you will. And I was thinking, at some level, these people know that they're killing me as well as themselves. That's why I say suicide, yes, murder, no, when it comes to smoking. I don't know what's fair. I mean, most of the people I know, the few I know that still smoke, they want to quit. They can't. It is such a strong addiction. Partly, it's not like heroin or crack or something like that, that not only is it bad for you generally, but also you can go to jail. So it's an added impetus not to do it. On the other hand, and it's really got social condemnation, where smoking, it's kind of cool. What did I just see? Some movie or some album cover that had somebody smoking on it. And I was thinking, wow, that's a good promotion for smoking. I don't know how far you should go. I mean, smoke-free, like this WRF is a smoke-free work environment. And did you know, for instance, although we don't do too many CDs anymore, that smoking actually began, some people would smoke in here while they're broadcasting, and it would cloud the lens of the CD player. So that's one of the reasons they stopped it in here. But, a place, who was it? I forgot. Maybe. Was it Abby Hoffman? That's too long ago. But somebody was saying that employers have a right to a drug-free workplace, but not a drug-free workforce. In other words, if you're smoking reefer on the weekend, what the hell business is it of the company you work for instance? And maybe the same thing here. I don't know. But I don't want to get off on that too much. But although you can, if you want, because Many of you are as ADD as I am, and we'll talk about anything, skip, hop, and a jump. 313-298-WRIF. Oh, here's a call from someone listening on the Internet. Obviously, it's Aaron in Pittsburgh, North Carolina. How you doing? You're on the air.
Hey, pretty good, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I wanted to ask what I think may be an unpopular question to you and your listeners. And I want to preface it by saying I'm a Air Force veteran of the first Gulf War from a long line of veterans. And the question, excuse me, I have a cold. The question I have is, how do we support our troops when the vast majority of them support this criminal administration? You know, they're outright, you know, they're cheering them on when they're behind them. You know, Zogby has done some polls. I'm a member of the Zogby membership, and they've done some polls of the military. And overwhelmingly, they support Bush, and they support this policy. So how do people like me and you and our listeners support these guys when they're basically supporting these criminals?
Well, I mean, Bush and them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine what it's like to be in the military and the kind of esprit de corps necessary to be a fighting unit. And it is so rare when, and usually in defeat is the only time that an army like ceases the fight and begins stopping the support of what they're involved in. The other thing is, too, the war just becomes very personal, right? I mean, I'm telling you this, and you were in there.
Okay.
And what you're concerned about, keeping your butt alive and that of your comrades in arm.
Mm-hmm.
So the war is all very, at one level, all very personal.
Well, the funny thing is that my father was in the Air Force when Bosnia was going on. And I could go into his office, you know, daily. I used to go in just to have a cup of coffee or see how he was doing. We lived near the base. And that's all you would hear was jokes about the president and people poking, you know, making fun of this war. And you don't hear that now. It's very interesting.
Yeah, well, there's certainly, even during World War II, that the grunts on the ground always had nothing but contempt for the officers and for what they were involved in, and were just hoping to get home alive.
Yes, I've heard it a lot.
I mean, the other thing is that Bush and Cheney, these scumbags that did everything they could to make sure that they did not fight in a war that they supported, the Vietnam War, they used the military as props. They can't go anywhere else where they're not met by hundreds and sometimes thousands of protesters. So they use these people twice. They use them as cannon fodder for their terrible war, and then they use them as props for when they make their support our oops statement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, let me leave you on a happy note.
Sure.
This past election cycle, I got around to voting in our local elections, and one of the incumbent mayor who was running called herself a Democrat, and we looked in the paper, and she said she supported her hero was Ronald Reagan.
Oh, there you
so
are.
So obviously, you know, this is North Carolina. She was a Dixiecrat, and a very progressive Democrat beat her by 2 votes.
Boy, oh boy. Thank you, Aaron.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. We'll see what state Dennis is in. Dennis, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Are you in Michigan or Louisville, or in Kentucky?
Kentucky.
Well, go ahead, sir. You're on the air.
Thank you. Just real quick, you guys, while I was holding, I heard you mentioned about Kwanzaa and how the attack against Kwanzaa. That's not what I want to talk about, but I think you're right. You know, it is a subtle attack against other religions and other celebrations and forms of celebration, especially Kwanzaa, when you realize that, as you know, I'm African American, we spend less than 0.5%, or we our businesses generate less than 0.5% of all business revenue in this country, and you know, we're 13% of the population. The right doesn't want us to have anything. They want to bury us. They want to put us under the ground as far as economic you know, empowerment. We're still slaves on the plantation, as far as I'm concerned. But my real topic was was about treason, and it kind of tied into, you know, the previous caller asking, you know, how do you get the military on your side? Well, first of all, you need to tell the military what treason is. The fact that we've undercut our government, our country here, our manufacturing base, our capability of producing our own weapons, our economic base, which is being doled out to China and India, and we don't have the same capability. We can't sustain a long-term war. That's why we're in trouble with this war here, is because we've been undercut. And we're undercutting ourselves. Our Republican leadership has sold out to the highest bidders in corporate, I'd say corporate America, but that wouldn't be true. It's now corporate multinationals.
Sure.
And, you know, the thing that I don't understand is why we don't get on that, why we don't define that, or not define it, but explain the definition of treason. The fact that, you know, these people have sold this country out, and we're, you know, we're killing ourselves. We're in debt to communist China. We're in debt to, you know, Japan, which is an ally, but we're also in debt to Korea. But, you know, the point is that we're selling our future away. And I don't understand why people don't see that as treason, the ultimate form of treason.
Yeah, as opposed to the kind of treason that these right-wingers are saying, that if you question official policy, somehow that's treasonous. That's...
Brewster Jennings, you know, what was that? You know, the truth still hadn't come out how many U.S. operatives were murdered or killed because of the leak to Novak. And, you know, that's treason, too. I don't see these guys being indignant about that.
Well, unfortunately, there's very little coherent opposition. So when the Republicans, they find out anything like that, the president was lying about his sexual dalliances, they are on that like a dog on a bone. But here, where the American public is opposed to the war, thinks Bush lied about getting us into the war, you can barely get more than a few Democrats to put their toe in the water.
We're kind of like Saddam Hussein, I guess, in his generals, the American public, in that we still believe that we're the only superpower, not realizing that we probably couldn't beat, I don't think we're capable of beating China right now. You know, we're still being lied to by our politicians, you know, that we're some grandiose country when we're in real serious trouble. We're losing manufacturing base. You know, you're in Detroit area, I guess.
Tell us, yeah.
It hurts me to my heart to see all these people being put out of the jobs. And here in Louisville, we've got 2 Ford plants that are in danger also. And it makes no sense, you know. And people say, well, we're doing this and that and everything because they don't make what we want. But who is hurting in the long run is our country, and it's hurting in the short run our people, the workers, the middle class of this country.
Yeah, which is going to rapidly disappear. Thank you, Dennis. Thanks for joining us from Louisville. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Always fun to get calls from across the country, broadcasting here from Detroit, Michigan. It's like being in Minnesota, though. It's like, this is fall still, and it's like 12 degrees here, and it's snowing. Here's Brian in, is it Clyde Township?
Yep.
Where's that?
Port Huron area.
Okay, welcome. What's up?
Earlier when we were talking about Howard Dean and he should be executed, I just think that was kind of an over-the-top statement, maybe being facetious. I'm a Democrat, but I really don't think even a Republican thinks he should be executed for that particular statement. You know what I'm saying?
I do, Brian, but I think you're too nice a person. I think they mean it. I think these people do not tolerate dissent.
Well, I mean...
I'd like to think you're right, and like I said, maybe they're just saying it because they know they'll get their name in the paper the next day, but that's dangerous talk. I mean, could you imagine me saying, I mean, like when Clinton is in office, someone dissented from something he did, I can't remember those guys, like Senator Dole ought to be tried for treason and executed. I mean, you'd think I'd lost my mind, right?
Well, yeah, but... You know, I hear this treason from Rush and O'Reilly, and I totally disagree with. If you disagree with somebody, it's not treason. But I don't know if I can buy that even a Republican thinks he should be executed, you know?
All right, well, let's throw that out to people. Do you think the Republicans are serious when they call dissenters, including, I guess now, the majority of the American people, treasonous, and those that utter it publicly should be, as some of these characters have said, tried for treason or even executed? All right, we'll be right back. Thank you, Brian. And 313-298-WRIF is our number.
This is WRIF.com.
The lowdown on the hottest concerts in town are only a click away with a singular wireless concert connection. Log on to the concerts page right now at WRIF.com to find out where your favorite bands are appearing live in concert across the Motor City. Keep it right here on the Riff for your chance to text in to win tickets, backstage passes, autographed rock merchandise, and more exclusively on your singular wireless phone. The singular wireless concert connection from Singular Wireless, raising the bar at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
You're listening to WRIF.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 482-220.
back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. Got one more to go. Then at 1 a.m., a couple of interesting interviews for you. And if I had a brain, I could remember who the hell they are. I'll think about it as we go along. Anyway, what are we talking about? One of the things I learned in talk show school, which I didn't go to, is that you're supposed to reset the topic. So people that are just joining you, or in particularly at the top of the hour, but we're talking about a lot of things, talking about where our money's going. Bush is building schools in Iraq. And in the meantime, in Detroit, they're cutting back on the security staffs. That's where our money's going, to Iraq, and not for our own country. And also we're talking about happy holidays and season greetings. So here is some of the stuff you're talking about. Oh, yeah, somebody wrote in, too, about whether or not it was right for a company to ban people that worked at a place from being smokers, not smoking inside, but even being smokers because of health costs and productivity and what have you. Daryl from Sterling Heights writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, even heavy exposure to secondhand smoke has only been shown to increase the risks of cancer by 1%. And that is the statistic all of this hysteria comes from. Well, I don't know, Daryl. But one thing I do know, if I'm eating, I don't want people burning leaves next to me. I mean, it's rude as hell. I mean, why in the world, and anyone who's a smoker, who's smoking in a public place, knows that they're bothering other people and they're offending other people. There's no way to get around the fact that's what's happening. Now, one of the things that's happening while the show goes on is there's a chat room, one of those deals where people that are listening to the show also write their opinions of what's going on and all of that. Marty writes in, those of us in Tom's chat room are wondering if you're watching the chat room. Now, that's Tom Hartmann, T-H-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N, or you can spell it anyway, just like regular Tom. I don't even have any idea, Marty, how to even look at it. And I don't know how Tom does it on his shows. Tom Hartman's a buddy of mine, nationally syndicated talk show host, one of the absolute best in the country. And he lets us use the chat room during this show. And people discuss the show and give their own opinions, which is cool. But I don't know how in the world he also simultaneously talks and does everything else that we have to do here and also participates in the chat room, which apparently that he does. So, no, I'm not. Okay. Right at the beginning of the show, I can't remember his name, there was some guy that was just screaming at me and all that. Mike writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Okay, why do you act like everyone that is right-wing is an absolute moron? You don't make yourself look any better. Also, nice job putting on the biggest idiot right-winger that has called your show tonight around 11:25. I'm sure that was just to make us look stupid. That's not true. He was a volunteer. I didn't even know. You know what I tell my phone screener and producer, Jay Hudson? Don't even tell me what you guys want to talk about. I have no idea what you're going to talk about or whether you're friendly or not, because you know there's a screen here. Usually the deal is, it'll say, let me go to the next, I'll tell you, get you ready here. Come on, you don't even have who's supposed to be next there. All right, I'm going to take, you're not on yet, but it's going to be Spike from Pennsylvania. And so it'll say, Spike doesn't agree with you on this, blah, 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 blah. Well, I don't know. I have no idea what Spike is going to talk about, whether he likes the show or not. So I don't know who's coming on. He's anyways, you are typical in one thing. Detroit is ailing. Who do you blame? Not Kwame Kilpatrick, the mayor, or the city council, or everyone running the city. Nope. Blame someone else. Detroit is a failure because the people that live there don't take care of their homes. They rob people. They kill people. They are some of the most uncivilized people in this country. Mike, you are such a moron. And you, if this is your proof that everyone in the right wing is not an absolute moron, you are doing a piss poor job because you, sir, are a moron and a racist to boot. Because this is typical. People not poor blame the poor for their own predicament because they could, of course, alleviate their own situation by, again, when a region, think about what happens in poorer regions of the world, in the poorer regions of this country. They breed the same kind of things no matter who's involved, who's the mayor, who's the city council, what's the race, what's the nationality. So you're yeah. He's now with George Bush. He is an idiot. I'm not a GW lover in any way, shape, or form. Well, it's good. Have a good night, he says. You too. But don't say stupid things, which you did. All right. I thought I had one other thing. I was going to talk about the economy, but there's too many of you on. All right. Let's go to Spike in, I can't make out what the city is. Hey, Spike, you're on the air.
Gonzo greetings from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Eastern?
Yeah, E-A-S-T-O-N. It's the first city where the Declaration of Independence was read out loud in public back in 1776.
Oh, Easton it is. Okay, that's exactly what it says here. I'm sorry. I have to apologize to Jay, who had it down correctly.
Don't worry.
Is it where? Is it near Philadelphia?
It's about 80 miles north. It took a few days after they wrote it for it to get up here. I guess they wanted a good buffer when they announced the revolution, and they came here, and about a half a block from my apartment building is actually the roundabout location in downtown where they read it.
Let me just say something. You hear what he said, you right-wingers? Revolution!
They didn't sound Larry Holmes, so we'll put up a fight in this town, I'll tell you.
You got to remember, too, Spike, the conservatives back then opposed the revolution.
Oh, well. Maybe we should start tar and feathering some of them out there and put them in their place as chicken hawks.
They were the traitors then.
And some of the traitors now, especially. Calling about the subject was brought up a little bit earlier about how the Democratic Party just keeps trying to be more and more like the Republicans to, quote, win elections.
Right.
And it's the biggest debacle strategy any political party, probably in the history of world politics, has undergone. We had a neoconservative vice presidential candidate in 2000. Gee, wonder why the Republicans look so good when he was reaffirming all their stances.
I mean, lately, Joe Lieberman, who is now a pal of Bush from Connecticut. I got an idea. Is there any way we could trade Lieberman to the Republicans for Olympia Snowe and who's the other woman senator from there? What's her name? It's right out of my brain. But anyways, they've got two liberal Republicans or moderate Republicans. There's barely anything left of moderate or there used to be liberal Republicans. So, yeah, I mean, and then the Democrats would wind up once. So get rid of Lieberman, who was such a jerk, and get these two women. Go ahead.
Well, Lieberman's just one of many. Certainly Hillary Clinton, I think, is kind of a disgrace to the word progressive or liberal.
Clinton.
Exactly. And what really kills me is then they get mad at people who don't support the Democratic Party when it comes to election time. Because I can't support we're not the other guys, when in reality, you are the other guys, just with a different mascot.
Yeah.
They can try to blame Nader all they want for their problems. Their biggest problem is when you're Republican light. It's a hard argument when you're just reaffirming the other side. You know, remember a time when debates, they actually debated?
Sure.
Tried to make, the one look better than the other with the exact same answer?
Yeah, yeah.
John Kerry, his answer to the war was more troops, more bombs, more death. And that's not a solution for a peaceful end over there. I mean, Kerry was perhaps a bigger warmonger leading up to this past presidential election than even Bush at times.
Well, it was so weird. I mean, I think most of us, like at least I did, just held my nose. And I mean, I thought that Bush was so horrible. But I agree. All my friends who didn't vote or voted for Nader, I agreed with every argument that they made about the Democrats and Kerry. But I don't know. I guess we've gone around the block about that one.
Well, my biggest argument is if the Democratic Party wants people like me to vote for them, they need to stand for universal health care, a living wage, and for crying out loud, a better tax system.
Sure, and anti-war. And you know what? If somebody did that in a forthright manner, they'd win. They'd absolutely win. You know, you're kind of breaking up a bit there, Spike, so I'm going to cut you loose from Eastman, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Sure. Thanks thanks for being on the program. Yeah, Hillary Clinton is co-sponsoring a bill to criminalize the burning of the American flag. Yeah, that's what I said. Now, this is supposed to be a liberal Democrat. Her supporters characterize this as an attempt to find a middle way between those who believe that flag burning is constitutionally protected free speech and those who want to ban it with a constitutional amendment. Every once in a while, rattle people's cages by getting crazy and say, we got to change the foundation document to have something you can't burn the symbol of the country. This is how what an opportunist this woman is. Flag burning, there's no history of it being directed against any target but the government. That's why the only time that people have burned the flag, mostly during the Vietnam War, and it was during the time of Nixon, and a couple times recently. Not even that frequently. So it would be something to create this constitutional amendment, and this is or this law that Hillary Clinton is introducing that would stop something that rarely, if ever, occurs. And what's wrong with it? Because people find it offensive. They don't like it. Well, the whole idea of political speech and the First Amendment is that offensive political speech is protected. That's why these guys put that in there in the first place. Because they knew the history of nation states was to condemn any kind of political speech that the rulers didn't like as treasonous. So we go back to these right-wing Republicans calling Howard Dean treasonous, and he should be hung and jailed and what have you. So, I mean, you see where all this is going. And Hillary Clinton's on board with this. Let me tell you something. If you really find burning the flag offensive, it's kind of odd for people that are big on private property. Like, I can't take my plastic, if this law was passed, I can't take my plastic made-in-China American flag and burn it. I mean, can I do it in my basement, my house? Or would the cops come in and arrest me under her law because I disposed of my private property in the way I wanted? Of course, you know the way you get rid of out-of-service flags. You burn them. I mean, every other country, they just throw them away with this whole big ceremony about it. Anyway, I think what would happen if these opportunistic politicians, now led by a allegedly, supposedly, ostensibly liberal Democrat, Hillary Clinton, they pass a law, you know what will happen? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flags will be burned. People that are going to say, that never even thought about doing this, will burn flags. I saw a few years ago that that people, when it looked like they were going to pass a constitutional amendment, that people were talking about burning flags and sending ashes into public officials. That this was going to be like a protest movement. This was going to be an FU response to something that doesn't even occur. And we were being led by morons. And that, you know, get some Democrats in there. People say, oh, you know, you're always criticizing the Republican Party. Get some Democrats in there. Let me open up on them. Former National Writers Union President Jonathan Tessini is expected to launch a Democratic primary challenge to New York Senator Hillary Clinton on a progressive platform that features a call for bringing U.S. troops home from Iraq. I mean, she's shifting all over the place. I mean, she voted for the war resolution knowing there were no weapons of mass destruction. Pure opportunism. So, of course, did Kerry and Edwards. And let me see. I thought he's got a central theme of a campaign that's also expected to advocate for fair trade, economic reforms, and universal health care. Now, wouldn't you rather have somebody like that in as senator from New York than Hillary Clinton? Also, I think if they ran McCain, the Republicans did, he would whoop her silly, I think. All right. Oh, man. Travis from Shelby, you've been waiting a long time. My apologies. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Peter Werby with you.
How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, no problem. I'm just calling a response to the guy earlier that pretty much yelled at you. I'm an Iraqi war vet. I got back not too long ago. I'm a grunt. And I mean, just to agree with you, any person who follows the facts knows that the war was started over a BS reason. President Bush knew that there was no weapons of mass destruction, but he went in anyhow. And, you know, it frustrates me to hear people say that it's because they threw planes into the tower. It's just frustrating, I guess.
But how does that make you feel? I mean, you were over there put in harm's way. I'm sure you must have seen some of people who the American soldiers that were hurt or even killed. What's your reaction to that?
At the time, you know, I never really thought about it. Politics wasn't really a big thing over there. But coming back, I come from a big family of military prior service, and my whole family absolutely hates Bush. My own father feels that Hitler would make a better president than Bush. And, you know, hearing what they would say and then, you know, looking at the facts and reading what was going on, you know, I blame him. I blame the president. I blame the vice president. You know, this was over a BS reason. You know, we were sent, we took, you know, as soldiers, we take an oath. Anybody who's listening who's a soldier knows we take an oath and we're going to follow orders. But in a sense, we were used and we were lied to. It really makes me mad. You know, I mean, I have lost a few friends, and they were lost. When you come down to it, they died for a lie.
Hmm. Well, who'd you serve with?
What's that?
Who did you serve with?
I was in a paratrooper company.
I was going to ask. Oh, yeah. Did you hear that Aaron from Pittsburgh, North Carolina? He said that he thought the majority of the armed forces supported Bush overwhelmingly.
Yep. I remember being in Iraq looking at the Army Times, and it was like 90% were for Bush, 10% were for Kerry. I don't understand mine, I guess you could say, but maybe they just don't want to, the average soldier doesn't want to believe that they're fighting for a wrong cause or what, or they just don't want to feel like they've been lied to, or, you know, all we did see was Fox 2 News, and we're only seeing over there, you know, unless we go on the Internet, Armed Forces Network, and, you know, they're just showing, I mean, I don't want to say the military's lying to us. I mean, that's not what they're doing, but, you know, I guess we're only hearing one kind of side of the story, but, I mean, personally, in my platoon, there was a lot of Democrats, a lot of pro-Kerrys, a lot of anti-Bush.
No. Well, Travis, you might want to take a look. I don't know if you have any interest in getting involved in stuff, but there's all sorts of groups, Iraq veterans against the war and military families against the war. I mean, be one thing. It is helpful because there is this way that these, what we call, I don't know if you've heard the phrase chicken hawks. It's the Cheneys and Bushes and all these people that got out of service in Vietnam, but, that it counters. I mean, how they got this mantle of militarism is so far beyond me. But I don't know. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Dan. Dan's in Romulus. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter. How you doing?
Doing excellent. Thank you.
I wrote this thing down. I'm not very good at talking in the air. A little nervous. So I wrote it down, and I would like to read it to you and get your comment on it.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's frustrating to see that in this country it seems that people aren't Americans anymore. People are either a Republican or a Democrat, liberal, conservative. Shouldn't Americans at least be on some sort of the same level of understanding, the understanding of what freedom really is and what the Constitution really means? People's views have become so politically steered to the point that Republicans believe that only Republicans are Americans and vice versa for some Democrats. We are losing sight of what an American is. Democrats and Republicans are making decisions based on what is good for the party or what is the Republican thing to do or what is the Democrat thing to do. We are turning into what I call Republicans, the unaborted bastard offspring of the American wet dream, you know, sex, drugs, and rigged voting machines. And that's it. I just wanted to read that to you.
Well, I mean, there's a lot there, and most of it I agree with, although I don't, it's kind of hard. I mean, I don't know why I always kind of, well, I say what I do about the Democrats, and then I wind up sort of defending them, but I think that intolerance, I mean, you hear, I mean, I certainly don't speak very nicely of these right-wing Republicans, but you never hear me saying they're not Americans or they're not good Americans, and I even say that, you know, I say their views are so extreme and all that they ought to have a little section of the country where they can just go hang out, but you never hear a Democrat saying that, critic of theirs ought to be executed. I mean, that's pretty unusual.
Right.
I would say. All right. Thank you very much, Dan. It's a good statement. In fact, I would say that oftentimes, not so much even reading. In fact, you know, of course, summarizing off that is pretty decent. But thank you for it. I appreciate you taking the time to put that all together. 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werbe with you here on Night Call. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com. CallTalkYes@Yahoo.com. And let's go to, I can't even see this. Is it Ari? Is that it in Ann Arbor?
It's Ari.
Ari. Okay.
Hi.
Okay.
I'm going to make this kind of quick because I have to go to bed. I'm actually 15, and I've been listening to your show all night because I couldn't sleep. You were talking about the whole treason thing and if the Republicans actually mean what they say. I completely agree that they do. They're kind of contradicting themselves. These are people that are going by the Constitution or claiming that they're going by everything constitutional. But if they're saying that critics can't have free speech about everything, like the war in Iraq right now, that Howard Dean has his own opinion that it's completely unnecessary or his whole opinion against it, they're being completely unconstitutional and unfair about it. So I completely agree that they mean everything they're saying because it is a fascist thing that they're all going by right now. And people that I've called in earlier about that, the first caller, what was his name, Rocky, the one that yelled at
him? Oh, yeah, it was Rocky. I couldn't remember his name, right.
Yeah, yeah. He was saying, or someone stated that you purposely picked someone from the right wing, like a right wing supporter, to go on your show and that you picked the most moronic one.
Yeah.
Well, if they're saying that this guy is moronic and that there's actually a non-ignorant Republican out there, their president isn't really making a good example for anyone else. So I don't see how they could say that there's someone that's non-ignorant, that's a Republican, when they're following somebody who completely has no idea what he's getting himself into and is just completely has his head basically too far up his ass to see what's completely happening.
Thank you, Ari.
Yeah.
Get a good night's sleep.
Okay, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Appreciate it. Echoing that, same thing. Season's greetings from Adam and Romulus. How is it that right-wingers can claim that this is the most free nation on earth at one moment, and the very next thing out of their mouth is some foolishness claiming that people who express their freedom of speech and vocally oppose the war and the administration are traitors and should be arrested, tried, and executed? Seems like a bit of a contradiction to me. And yes, I think they mean exactly what they say. I am positive that the right would like nothing more than to exterminate all those who oppose them. If you need any proof of that, just look at history. Yeah, it is true. These people, like I say, are mostly motivated by rage and fear. And of course, the Bushes and the Cheneys and all the rest of them are really good at manipulating all of that. But it's also a fear of questioning authority because they are authoritarian figures and they come on very cocksure frequently. I use that word advisedly. And yet beneath them, they're terrified of these father figures that they are good at delivering orders to everyone below them. But boy, the big daddy above them. That just scares the absolute hell out of them. Let's see here. We'll move on and grab John from St. Clair Shores. John, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'm probably going to shift gears here. But,
it's okay.
Did you read the Metro? I don't read the Metro Times a lot, but I was absolutely entranced by the article about mass transit.
No, I didn't.
It was an excellent article, and I I think that basically when Detroit gets better, the rest of the country will get better. I mean, Detroit is kind of a barometer of what goes on. You think it's New York or Chicago, but in this area, I realize if you would read that article, it was excellently written, and mm-hmm. It's like we are the largest city in North America, and I'm talking the city limits, 8 mile city proper, not the suburbs. We're the largest city without a mass transit system. I mean, I'm talking light rail or a rail system.
Well, the only problem is where does it go? I mean, we got the people mover, which I always call the train to nowhere.
Horizontal elevator.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a horizontal elevator.
Well,
basically what it is. But, you know, I mean, look at Chicago, look at Minneapolis has got a light rail system, Milwaukee's putting one in, and St. Louis, look what's happening in Salt Lake City. The article was really good. And I think that, you know, the fear-based mentality that we have has to stop, and I think that even right-wing conservatives are saying if we would have put a mass transit system in like 30 years ago, we would have been light years ahead of where we are now.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that the movement of capital, as they call it, dictates that that it has no respect for national borders nor loyalty to a particular country. And when you can start lowering dramatically your cost of production by going to China or going to Indonesia or going to Mexico, your industrial base is going to be threatened, and in some ways in this country, not, I wouldn't say close to disappearing, but compared to what it was, yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to transit system, as you're suggesting, and I know the people in Ferndale, I hope he's not listening because I'm not remembering his name, the city manager of Ferndale, who's been a big proponent of that, and I've interviewed him before. Man.
Well, you know what? Oakland County is just so afraid of getting mass transit. You know what? I'll tell you this much, and then you know what? You can comment on this. You make a T from downtown to Mount Clemens and from Northland to Eastland. Build a subway and keep Oakland County out of it. I guarantee you the money, they will come. Trust me.
All right.
Economics will follow.
Thank you, John.
All right, bye.
Appreciate it. Here is an email from Diana. She's listening in Pennsylvania. In fact, she says, this has been making the rounds at my University of Pennsylvania, and I think it's great, which is comearmageddon.blogspot.com. Comearmageddon.blogspot.com. I hope it's cool, Diana, because I haven't even looked at it. We get together every Sunday night and stream your show. That's amazing. I think you'll agree with this writer 100%. Okay. She says, P.S., if they outlaw, and here's exactly what I was talking about. I just mentioned earlier that terrible opportunist Hillary Clinton is introducing a bill to outlaw flag burning. It's not like it's happening. So this is what's broke in order to fix it. Why do we need a law if there's nothing going on? So she is totally pandering, pimping this out. And in fact, that is the name of this, or the headline of this editorial from the New York Times, Senator Clinton in pander mode. She's pandering. Anyways, Diana writes, if they outlaw flag burning, I will personally drive to D.C. and light a flag on fire in front of the Black House, the Reich Chancellery. F them, she says, although she says it in much, much ruder terms. All right, back to our phones. Hey, we got some open lines for you if you've been trying to get through for a while. Here's Al in Inkster. Al, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Hi.
Notice these people all upset about flag burning aren't complaining about flags being flown in the rain, the snow, after dark, all the things I was taught by my dad not to do to a flag.
Are they still doing that? I notice they always take them down. You're supposed to have a spotlight on it. You know, this is the only country in the world that has rules like that about its flag. It's totally nuts. I think most of them came in after World War One. And when the American Legion was formed? I think so.
Legion was formed post World War One. Yeah.
Yeah, and they made up the phrase un-American.
I believe. Thought it was the Attorney General for Woodrow Wilson who was fighting the pacifists against World War One.
Palmer? No, I don't think. Well, it's in there in the history book somewhere. But there, no other country has a word like that. Un-English.
You're un-Canadian.
You're un-Canadian.
You're un-Irish.
Yeah, you're un-Australian. What an un-Australian.
Germany probably did. As a matter of fact, Germany did.
They did. I hate to say
Auslander.
It.
Auslander.
There was something like non-Deutsch. Also, they had great laws about their flag. So we ought to just.
I called to say that it's disgusting that in this country, people can work 40 hours a week and not bring home enough to provide for their family.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's much worse than any of the government figures show. I mean, there's tens of millions more people than the 50 million that we say are poor in this country.
Well, they haven't revised the poverty statistics since, what, back in 1984, 86, back during the Reagan era.
Yeah, we were talking about this one day. It's something like $19,500 for a family of four. I mean,
I'm a single person, and I'm making about that a year, and it's hard to get by.
Yeah, well, I could imagine.
Car note or vet bill, car note or groceries, heating or groceries.
Yeah.
You're constantly balancing all this out.
Hey, and I went to my local Citgo station where I always go because it's Venezuelan oil, and
where I buy my gas now too.
And it was down to $1.99. I just filled up today, and everywhere else it's $2.13. One of the things Citgo will not do, it will not under it could undercut all the American refiners and probably charge 50 cents a gallon less. But two things. That would start an S-storm among, you know, unfair competition, they'd say. And the other thing is that Venezuela uses it for all sorts of development and helping the poor of its country, and now, of course, aiding the poor of this country, delivering home heating oil to the poor. Isn't that amazing? Venezuela helping the poor in the United States. What a disgrace.
When we can't help our own.
Yeah. Well, we could. We could easily.
If we didn't spend our money, you know, what's it, $1 billion a day in Iraq? And, you know, if we didn't give tax cuts, you know, there are more tax cuts coming down that are geared towards the top one-tenth of 1%.
Somewhere I have this. I will.
The richest.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Who do we got here? It's Jason in Ypsilanti. Hey, Jason. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Another great show.
Well, thank you.
I kind of wanted to talk, follow up again on the economy. it's a big issue, and I don't think people appreciate kind of the danger we're going into with this debt and with the peak oil situation and the fact that our dollar is, its value has been based on the fact that we, well, at first we were the largest oil producer, and now we've been the largest oil user, so the entire trading network of the Western kind of economy has been based on the transactions of buying oil. And ever since we came off the gold standard in 1971, the last kind of way we were on the gold standard, Nixon took us off of it so he could pay for the other war, the big mistake, we've been running up this debt, surprisingly enough, after we went off of it. And they avoided...
No, I mean, that's not the only reason we have a debt. We have a debt because, like people that are maxed out on their credit card, Bush spent more than we had.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, that's kind of the plan, is instead of creating wealth with jobs and, you know, with jobs that kind of harness the wealth of the community in a productive way, they're really just kind of like a vampire sucking what wealth there is, you know, out of the communities with this debt and inflation and the policies that they're, you know, reinforcing are really tearing us all down. And once they build up to a certain size, there's just no way to turn it back after you you get to a point of hyperinflation. It happened to Germany in the 20s when they tried to print money to get their way out of in that case it was war reparations they were forced to pay. But we could run into a similar situation, and again, the wealthy will be protected. A lot of people take comfort from the fact that they think the wealthy are in the same boat that we are. But they're not. They have assets, and they're privy to information before all of this. This is why the perfect theory of perfect markets, you know, quote-unquote free market, does not work.
Yeah.
Because information does not flow evenly. So these people, they'll invest in things like gold, and if you've noticed, gold has gone up over $500 an ounce. That's a sign of inefficiency in a fiat money economy. And that means...
Well, it's impossible not to have what you're calling a fiat money economy in a modern economy. There's not enough gold backed there's not enough gold to back the amount of currency that's needed to trade to exchange goods within the international economy. So, in fact, I mean, it's all just in all fictional wealth. It's all just cyber wealth. I mean, I don't even. I mean, if you even think, I mean, think about this. It's probably not too much different from you, Jason. I rarely see any money. I have my check is automatically deposited, and then I charge almost everything on my credit card, and then I write a check. I mean, I use cash to. I don't even use cash at the gas pump. I use a credit card. I mean, once in a while, I'm gonna buy a pack of gum. So we're heading towards, in many ways, a cashless economy that's sort of a cyber economy that's just based on people's faith, right?
Well, it was based on, there was a formula when we switched to this, back in the Bretton Woods system, it was formulated in 1945, that between the Western economies, we weren't on the gold standard like we were before, where everyone would have an amount of gold to use as a medium of exchange, but the central banks held it, and then they printed fiat currency in a fractional relationship to it. So they would actually hold like 10 times more currency than they had gold, and then it got more and more. So
yeah, Jason, this is actually probably getting a little too technical, and I'm way behind in doing my spot, so I think we're going to have to leave it at that. But this is crucial, and people don't understand money. I'm not even sure. I mean, if you think about it, what represents value? Whew. Tough. All right, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. 313-298-WRIF.
This is WRIF.com.
Tired of expensive phone bills? Standard phone service can cost a minimum of $30. And for the unlimited packages, it's anywhere from $40 to $70. After adding all the taxes and fees, the question is it really worth it? I'd like to introduce you to Corecom's new product, Voice over Internet Protocol, or simply VoIP. This innovation allows you to talk to anyone around the world by using your broadband internet connection. With its advanced features, VoIP is revolutionizing telephone service as we know it today. Even more exciting is that this can all be done at a fraction of the price of traditional phone service. Why would you pay more when you can pay less? If you've got high-speed internet access, Corecom can offer you a package for as low as $15.99 per month. When was the last time your phone company offered you any package options that low? As an added bonus, if you call within the next 10 minutes, Corecom will throw in 1 month free. All you have to do is call 1-866-680-CORE. That's 1-866-680-CORE. Call now and mention promotion code WRIF, or if you register online, type in promotion code WRIF to get your free month. Corecom, revolutionizing phone service one call at a time.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
Hi, this is Colleen McDonald, president of Holiday Automotive Group. You know us as Holiday Chevrolet in Farmington Hills, Livonia Chrysler Jeep in Livonia, and Century Dodge in Taylor. We know it's never fun to have to bring your car in for service, and worse yet, if you've been in an accident. But rest assured, our service staff is here and ready to help you. To make an appointment, go online at weloveholiday.com. It's that easy.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
We also have special discounts if you need body work on your vehicle and accept all insurance companies. Call us at 866-867-0909 for more information. We're the Holiday Automotive Group. We've got you covered from Downriver to Oakland County.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
On the riff, then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best riff rock
the way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. This is our last call-in segment, and then we'll go to our interviews, including William Hartung from the World, I'm trying to remember all this. Anyways, from some think tank in New York, talking about don't turn off. I mean, this is going to sound boring. Like the impact of the World Bank on our economy. You go. Hey, listen. Yeah, we're out there in the real world trying to get enough spending money to support ourselves, our family, thinking about the future, our region, everything. So this stuff is pretty key. Mage is listening in England, and he wrote into, I'm assuming it's a he, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Bill Hicks, an incredible comedian, died, 10 years ago probably or more. He said, the flag is a symbol that stands for the freedom to burn the effing flag. Yeah. Bush's numbers have gone up a little because of in the latest poll, because he said things are going so swimmingly in the economy. It doesn't really appear as that to many of us here in the Detroit area. But on the other hand, the House has voted tax cuts of almost $100 billion. And where does it say this? I thought it said that the most of it will go to the upper. Oh, yeah. Tax analysts agree that the overwhelming bulk of dividends go to the top 5% of income earners. And that's what they're this is going to protect tax cuts for stock dividends and capital gains for 2 years at the cost of $20 billion. There's another $56 billion. And in the meantime, there's this deficit. So you're cutting revenue, right, and still making the same expenditures, these wild expenditures on the war in Iraq. We don't have enough money to protect our kids in Detroit, but we're building schools and giving them textbooks in Iraq. So what's the deal? So we're going to cut spending, but still the tax cuts, cutting revenue for the rich, or cutting what the rich would give in terms of revenue if this wasn't going on. So their pals in the Senate are giving more and more money to the wealthy, and they figure it's trickle down, right? So if they cut taxes and the rich make more money, they'll reinvest it and open businesses, and then us commoners, the peasantry, will benefit. But is this here? Yeah. From our friends at United for a Fair Economy. Extended tax cuts that will primarily benefit the wealthy. A new study is showing that it's called, forget the name of it, examines the administration's claim that tax cuts create jobs and finds it without merit. Evidence shows that historically, changes in tax rates have no discernible effect on employment. Moreover, during the Bush administration, job creation since 2003 has fallen millions of jobs short of the administration's promises and is significantly below what normally would be expected without extraordinary economic stimulus. So things aren't going well. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned Friday of possible serious consequences to the economy if policymakers do not attack federal budget deficits projected to soar with baby boomer requirements. So they cut some stuff, the Republicans did, and of course they attacked the poor. Food stamps, child support enforcement, Medicaid. I mean, screw the poor. They don't vote anyways, and when they do, they vote Democrat. I mean, these people are so evil, which is an anagram for vile. College loans are going to cut that out as well. How do we exist on the planet with these people? Let's go to Dan. Dan's in North Alabama. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I just was responding to, the whole idea that, it's the less fortunate in society that they get, pretty well crapped on. And I happen to be one of them, and I happen to agree more. And from my standpoint, I can tell you that it's for lack of a better phrase, I think it's the establishment that does this. And I worked at a plant here in North Alabama at one point in time, and had a supervisor explain to me that, the system does tend to keep us where we are. There has to be a lower class, a middle class, and an upper class.
That's nice. Yeah.
From a dog's eye view, for lack of a better phrase, once again, that's what I can see. That's what I can see, because I see everybody around me, I'm lumped into a category, and these people I keep seeing can't even think right now. But, you know, it's...
Well, you got it. You're on a 7-second delay, so why don't you turn that all off? Yeah, well, given the way the system's structured, in order to essentially loot the middle class and the working class, there has to be these strict class structures, because if you had, as you had as a national goal, meeting everyone's need and a system of fairness, and really cared about family values so that we wanted every family, and which meant all the children as well, to have an equal break and good health care, it wouldn't be structured like this. I mean, right now, there's tens of millions of people and millions of kids that live in dire circumstances in terms of the children don't get proper schooling, don't get proper nutrition, don't get proper health care, and these SOB Republicans are cutting Medicaid that'll affect, I forgot how many, I saw the figures, some hundreds of thousands of children. Phew. And in the meantime, they're giving their rich pals tax breaks. I don't know, what do these Republicans say about it? All right, thanks, Dan. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to go through some of these a little quicker now as we get towards the end of the show. It's John in Pontiac. John, hi. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. I wanted to address two issues real quick. First one, you've been talking about the flag burning issue a lot today, and I just wanted to point out one of the reasons the Republicans stand against it is because, even though a lot of us have forgotten why the law was originally made that when a flag is sullied, it's supposed to be burned, the Republicans haven't entirely forgotten. It was because our forefathers created this country by saying, damn, our political system isn't working. Let's overthrow it and put something new in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turned around and said, well, as a reminder to the American people, the people that will follow us into the future, let's put a law in place that will remind them that that's exactly what you're supposed to do with a nation. When it becomes sullied, destroy it and replace it with something that works.
Which is Jeffersonian. That's what essentially what Jefferson said.
Exactly. The other thing I wanted to talk about was our economy. You got all this bullshit coming out of Congress and all the government agencies saying how good our economy is right now, where our economy is recovering, yada, yada, yada. Even if you throw out all of the happy horse shit that everybody knows about and Congress has caused. About,
hey, we're with the S word, right? You're on strike, too.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Anyway, even if you throw all this nonsense out about our economy failing internationally because we're in debt to everybody else, which I'm not saying it's nonsense because it's not true. We all know it is.
Hmm.
I'm saying through this particular argument it's nonsense because it doesn't directly relate to what's going on here at home, which is the fact that our economy has recovered. As a for instance, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but let's say 10 points out of the 100 that it fell. And nobody's stopping to think, I support our troops as much as the next guy, but nobody's stopping to think exactly what's going to happen when our troops do finally come home. They're guaranteed their old jobs back because they're not allowed to lose their jobs because they defended our nation, which is great.
Yeah, but you're seeing more people in the job pool. Well, you got to look at, John, when you talk about what are the yardsticks for assessing the economy? Well, the stock market's up. There's great return on investment. And the employment rate is not bad. But it doesn't take into account the millions of people whose jobs have lessened in terms of what they're earning, the fact that millions of people that have become discouraged don't even look for it. I mean, if we even got the phrase, but so many people are in temporary jobs, part-time jobs, and all of that. I mean, there's a good section of the population. I mean, I walk around, when I take a walk, my wife and I walk, I mean, we walk through three or four suburbs just because they're all kind of close together. And in the wealthier ones, boy, I mean, they're just building additions and people got new cars. And so, there's a section of the population that's doing fine. Go out to a lot of suburbs and people are eating meals for 40, 50 bucks a piece and it all looks good. But ultimately, it's, why do we have tens of millions of people without health insurance, tens of millions of people with bad paying jobs. None of this has to be. All right. Thank you, John. I appreciate your call. Rich is listening in Boulder, Colorado. He writes in the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com. Hey, Pete, if we as peace activists, humanitarians, environmentalists, liberals, Democrats, or whatever are against the war and environmental destruction, then why don't we wage a war on the technology of the internal combustion engine, particularly the automobile? My advice is skip the anti-war rally and go to your city planning meeting instead and demand better mass transit, pedestrian and bicycle facilities. I truly believe this will prevent or reduce future oil wars. Boycott the auto show, he says. It's here in Detroit, for those of you listening out of town. Big one. Major auto show. Well, the oil, sure. Internal combustion engine, sure. I mean, we could get rid of all of this. I mean, if we realize that there is a crisis, a social, an economic and military crisis brought on by dependence on the internal combustion engine and fueling it with oil, and admitted to the crisis and began social planning in terms of it, we could alter things. But as long as there's not that recognition, I mean, it's just the good-hearted among us or the wise among us that see that all. All right, let's take another couple of calls here real quickly. It's John from Whitmore Lake. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. First thing I want to say is, one, there was a listener out there that said that you suggested you screened your callers. And for one, I'm on here and nobody screened me. It's the first time I listened to your show. And, you know, I'm not really, don't really agree with everything you say, but I do respect that, like you and Drew and Mike, that Riff lets everybody talk freely and, you know, voice your opinion. So I do listen to you, and I will respect that.
Oh, good.
Well, one of the things that I've seen, and maybe not just this show, everybody seems to say the majority of the people are opposed to the war. But I think at one time that majority of the people were with Bush on the war, maybe at the very beginning of it.
Sure. Yeah, they were.
And I don't think that's something that you could all of a sudden change stride. It's kind of like a couch quarterback where, you know, you're in the middle of with your game plan, and all of a sudden it's not working to the way everybody likes. Now everybody's opposed. I don't think a war is something you can just get up and stop your game plan with.
Well, I don't think they had much of a plan. I mean, that's the problem, John. And the other thing is that when we found out that what he said was a threat to us turned out to not be a threat, that there was no connection between Iraq and 9/11, everything that we had been angered and fearful of turned out to be a lie. And then, plus, it didn't work, and they didn't plan. Remember, we were told that we would be welcomed as liberators, that they would throw flowers at our feet. One of these guys said that we wouldn't have to even spend any of our tax dollars, that Iraqi oil would pay for it all. Well, these are, you know, pretty serious policy errors, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I think so. But I think maybe also, and I would at least hope, there might be a few things that we don't know about it. You know, hopefully there's a game plan or something that the media hasn't got a hold of, we don't know about. I guess I got hope that way. I got to say I was guilty as being a Bush supporter at first, and now I'm kind of questioning myself. But under my theory here is trying to say that, you know, well, I was for it at first. How can I be opposed of it now? You know, I'm one of the go ahead and do it, but now
Well, there are different circumstances. I mean, if we believed, as a great number of the American people did, that there was an imminent threat, not only to the region, as we were told, but also to the United States itself, that Saddam Hussein was developing weapons of mass destruction, that he had stockpiles of some of the most horrible weapons imaginable. Well, it makes sense to want to get rid of that threat. Well, it turned out that it was all just fabricated. At best, it was totally bad intelligence and believed by Bush and them, where they should have known better, as more and more comes out. And at worst, they purposely misrepresented it. So I think a change is relevant. All right, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I got to end the show, and welcome to John as a new listener. My apologies to Chuck and Eric. We'll have to get you another time. Stay tuned for some interviews. Have a good week, and back next week.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919, 1-800-903-1919. 101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you can win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play, with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor. This is WRIF.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining us. Detroit, Michigan, boy, a lot of economic downswings, what with what we're hearing from Ford, General Motors, Delphi. And usually we think locally. I mean, there's an old saying about think globally, act locally, but boy, both they both seem pretty difficult. I'd like to bring back to our microphones on the Peter Werby Show someone who's always been a good source of information, William Hartung. And Bill Hartung is a fellow at the World Policy Institute in New York. Bill, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Hey, so the World Bank is this entity of which Paul Wolfowitz is the president. He spoke the other day at the National Press Club, and you had a pretty strong reaction to it from the material I saw, the quotes, which actually got me to give you a ring and get you back on the show. Well, tell us a little about Paul Wolfowitz, and it's almost like ancient history. Of course, everything older than 2 weeks in America is ancient history. But remind us about Paul Wolfowitz and his current position.
Well, you know, I thought it was outrageous to have somebody like Paul Wolfowitz with his credibility problems. I mean, he's the one who talked about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, about how U.S. troops would be greeted as liberators, about how Iraqi reconstruction would pay for itself. He told Vanity Fair that they chose the weapons of mass destruction rationale because it seemed like the one that was working. So he's got this history of cynicism and distortion, not to mention being not a very good economic prognosticator when it comes to the cost of the war in Iraq. And now he's running one of the world's most important economic institutions, which is just, well, you know, if it wasn't the Bush years, it would be unbelievable.
Well, and Paul Wolfowitz was one of the sort of now famous neocons that helped shape a lot of Bush policy. Who is he? Where did he come from, and how did he wind up shaping policy?
Well, he had a previous stint in government some years ago. He was U.S. ambassador to Indonesia right around the time when Indonesia had occupied East Timor. He was in the State Department dealing with Asia issues. He was an academic at Johns Hopkins. He was a member of the Project for the New American Century, which in the latter part of the Clinton administration called for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. So he was one of the prominent neoconservatives who basically pushed heavily from day one of the Bush administration to go into Iraq. They have this new doctrine of preemptive war, where basically you shoot first and you ask questions later. And that's the kind of policy that leads to the mess we're seeing now in Iraq.
To people that can't exactly place Paul Wolfowitz, some of you may remember him from Fahrenheit 9/11. There was talk about unfair use of outtakes. He was the guy that Michael Moore had shots of putting his comb in his mouth to get it filled with spit and then comb his hair straight back. So maybe that refreshes some memories, at least for that incident, but doesn't tell us too much about the role. Now, he has quite a history. How does he get to be the head of the World Bank, though? That seems to suggest that one would have some expertise in economic affairs, like in banking?
Well, it's interesting. The last Secretary of Defense to go to the World Bank was Robert McNamara after the Vietnam War debacle. So it seems to be kind of a resting place for people who want to hide out from their past misdeeds at the Pentagon, more so than a place that looks for, you know, skilled economists. Wolfowitz, though, is he's kind of shameless. I mean, this event at the press club was not a friendly event. I mean, you know, he didn't get raucous applause. His role in the lead up to Iraq was mentioned, as was the fact that he got a deferment, had never fought in a war himself. There was an unflattering piece about it by Dana Milbank in the Washington Post. So, but Wolfowitz appeared to be unflappable. I mean, he just sort of said, well, he thinks what they've done in Iraq will do some good in the world, and things are always harder than you think they're going to be. And he doesn't really seem to be one who reflects on the consequences of his past actions or assume that there's any job that he can't tackle.
Well, you know, Bill Hartung, that ordinary mortals like you and me in the listening audience, when we screw up, there's pretty heavy consequences. But I think that there is this sense of invulnerability of everyone within this administration that no matter how bad you blow it, hey, you're back on the job or in some job on Monday. There are no consequences for mistakes.
No. No, the rare exception, you know, there was a Bush procurement official who was convicted as part of the Abramoff lobbying scheme. You've got the indictment of Scooter Libby, which may or may not eventuate in conviction. So, you know, once in a blue moon, there's some force from the outside that holds some of the people lower down the chain to some accountability. But even in those cases, the administration tends not to admit that there's anything wrong. They tend to make excuses. They tend to claim it's, as Tom DeLay has done, you know, prosecution's politically motivated. So, yeah, there is this sense that they can do no wrong, even when the evidence is staring us all in the face.
Now, Paul Wolfowitz is the president of the World Bank, and we hear that a lot, but that kind of a head-scratcher, I think, for the average person. What is the World Bank? What does it do? How does it function in the world, and who owns the bank, and on whose behalf does it function?
Well, it's one of these multilateral economic institutions, like the International Monetary Fund. So basically, the world's richest countries are the main participants in terms of putting money in and the main controllers in terms of decision-making. The World Bank makes investments in development projects all over the world, but they have particular kind of preferences. You know, they often hold countries, as does the IMF, to very stringent standards about keeping their budgets balanced, about not subsidizing things like food, about they're much more likely to be building big projects that may displace communities and so forth than they are to do kind of bread and butter things that might help people immediately. So they're part of the whole machinery of globalization, which is sort of the race to the bottom, seeing how low the benefits can go, how low the wages can go for people in all parts of the world. And, of course, that has an impact in our country, particularly, I think, in the manufacturing industries, where the World Bank helps create a climate where it's hard to maintain, you know, good jobs, good wages. It gives companies more options to kind of go shopping around the world for the cheapest deal they can find to produce their products.
Yeah, the manufacturing sector, I think several of us remember that from a while ago here in the Detroit area. But now the World Bank certainly doesn't define its own role in the manner that you did. You're critical of the bank and its the way it functions. And actually, a little later, I'd like to get some examples of exactly what you mean. But they don't function, do they? As a bank, like our local bank, it's there to provide dividends to its stockholders by giving mortgages and loans and doing checking and what have you. The World Bank, what's its ostensible purpose? If you had to define it what would Paul Wolfowitz say that the function of the World Bank is?
Well, they would say that their role is to try to reduce poverty in the world, and to do so in ways that help countries develop market economies. And I think that would be their short answer to what their reason for being is.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, I was kind of sitting back there thinking. So, all right. So that's what they say. And so their primary purpose is not to realize a profit, but to help with, like, say, a big electoral project somewhere or setting up aspects of a market economy. Maybe we would do well at this point if you gave us a specific example, is where they moved into, for instance, a third world country with the purpose of doing something in terms of their mission statement to help alleviate poverty, to set up a vibrant market economy. But in your estimation, Bill Hartung, it had the opposite effect.
Well, they're talking about funding a big oil pipeline from Chad across to the country of Guinea, where there's oil resources being developed. And a lot of the oil-rich countries in Africa, most of which are ruled by dictatorships, some have called them kleptocracies because they steal so much of their own country's resources. But anyway, a project like that often ends up benefiting the oil companies, the elites in the countries in question, displacing communities, threatening the environment. And of course, you know, no one's going to say, well, a poor country shouldn't have the right to develop its oil resources. But generally, the World Bank helps contribute to the atmosphere where it's done from the top down, where communities aren't consulted about how the projects are carried forward, where there's really no kind of democratic input as to how this all should be done. There's also a case in China where they want to basically block a big freshwater river lake system that'll displace a lot of villages and ruin an environmentally sensitive area. So there's projects of that sort, as well as just their general policy of, you know, often doing more to benefit the kind of the big folks, the political elites and the big companies, than they do to, you know, have projects that kind of meet the needs of communities.
Well, internationally, let me put it the opposite way. It doesn't sound much differently than I was thinking than what occurs domestically. I mean, essentially, this is the trickle-down theory. If you create an infrastructure that certainly in any society, the elite benefit the most from it. But if you have a wealthy society at the top, then enough trickles down to us peasants that things seem to work out okay. And I was thinking, just as what everything that you, the definitions that you just laid out in terms of how they function would apply equally in the private sector, what's been happening here with General Motors and Delphi and now Ford, no democratic input, everything that occurs benefits the elites and onward.
Well, and I think there's a link because, you know, one of the reasons we have had a middle class in this country is because of the union movement. And the union movement's under siege, and part of the reason they're under siege is because there's much easier ability now for companies to move employment overseas. There's pressure on wages from production in places like China, where there's certainly no labor rights. World Bank, International Monetary Fund are kind of enablers of that process. They kind of grease the wheels of globalization and the negative consequences of it, so that we're feeling it here, and they would feel it in an even more extreme way in some of these poorer countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, when talking about the Delphi situation, it does look like it's coming to a strike. I think they probably thought the UAW here in Detroit would just eat anything, but I think they've even gotten to past their point of indigestion. And on a radio talk show, I do a phone-in show, I was militantly saying, it's time for a strike and, you know, like that. And somebody called in and just said, they'll just move. Delphi has plants all over the world. They'll just pick up the production somewhere else. So I said, in other words, we're screwed? And the caller said, yeah. So this globalization is not exactly like a situation we confronted in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. We are kind of the average person, the middle class, the working class, kind of over a barrel.
Well, I think, you know, there's only two ways to try to tip the balance back towards ordinary working people. One is to have organizing around the world and sort of coordinate so that these companies can't just, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul. But also, I think if efforts to organize at more levels of the society, there was recently a victory in Texas, of all places, where they got decent wages and health benefits for janitors who work for these private companies that supply services to a lot of the big corporations there. And I think if the service sector is organized, there's more drives in the industrial sector. There's cooperation with unions and people attempting to make unions around the world. Then, maybe we've got a shot at slowing this down and turning it to our advantage. And, of course, it wouldn't hurt if we had some government officials who stood up for the average person once in a while.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me, and I think you, as always, are trying to be give us forthright an analysis of what's happening. It's certainly everything you said is tentative, and I don't think you can offer much more than that. And you think about the kind of almost triumphalism of the late 1930s when the labor movement thought for sure and did pretty well about it, that they were going to organize everywhere. There were sit-down strikes in Kresge's and Dime Store in downtown Detroit. Everybody was infused with that spirit. And now we're almost to the point of saying, please, sir, don't kill everything so quickly, which is certainly means that the average person is on the defensive considerably.
Oh, I think that's true. I think we need sort of a new spark. And it's I think people are going to wake up to not just the economic forces, but to the political forces that have been kind of, you know, dragging us down in these recent years. It's just a question of how to kind of muster that energy and accumulate it to the point where people feel like they're not alone in this. I think there's been a lot of divide and conquer that's gone on in the last number of years, which is one of the things that's driven down the unionization rate. One of the things, of course, in America is that a lot of people think that they're going to be the one who makes it. They're going to win American Idol. They're going to hit the lotto. They're going to be the one that starts their own business. And, you know, some people do that, but the majority do not. And so, and therefore, we need ways to work together to make the economic pie a lot fairer than it is now.
Mm-hmm. Bill Hartung is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. Bill is a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute in New York, and you can go to worldpolicy.org, worldpolicy.org. There'll also be a link on my site, peterwerbe.com. I saw the New York Times today, and it said Bush's ratings are up, and I thought, wow, what the hell is happening here? And I think it went up from like 37% to 40%, and they said a lot of it was based on good economic reports. And I'm thinking, well, it doesn't seem to be exactly what we're hearing here in our local papers, with more and more plant shutdowns and trimming workforces and what have you. I mean, can you have at once a robust economy like the claim is that we have, and at the same time great sectors of the population suffering, or suffering lower wages, stagnant wages, layoffs and what have you?
Well, I think it's kind of a bait-and-switch thing. I think it's a good economy for certain investors. It's a good economy for some sectors of the upper middle class. And, of course, those people answer opinion polls. They're more likely to vote in many cases. So there's kind of an elite that benefits from these kinds of conditions. But certainly the majority of people do not. And I think we may have had a mild uptick and it's what it was 3 or 6 months ago, but for the average person who's struggling to make a living, it's not going to be noticeable.
Yeah, also I think people want to believe, because most of us have to face the world as solitary individuals. We were talking just a little while ago about unions. If you have a union, if you have both your fellow employees and an apparatus that can both represent you and speak for you as a unified voice and stand up on certain issues, well, then you don't have to depend solely on the elites. Now, most of us, we're hoping. And hope is a pretty empty emotion. I mean, that doesn't have much substance to it. So I think that's it. The forces of the economy appear so far out of our hands, and as individuals, I think they are. The elites, I think that's an important phrase, seem to have such absolute control that what we were saying earlier as well, they don't have to pay for their mistakes. I think people want to believe, but if you couldn't, I'd hate to have a situation where only 40% of my listeners believed anything I said. That wouldn't be a very good endorsement.
Well, but if it was up from 37, that would make all the difference in the world.
I'd say, hey, boss, I'm on the way up. Let me look at our clock here. Well, yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about, and people frequently, in fact, my wife, I mentioned something, and I said, the balance of trade is getting worse. She said, what does that all mean? And I went, well, and I won't even give you my attempt at a lame explanation. Let me ask you, if you were to answer her and the others listening, and someone said, what's the balance of trade, and what's the problems with having a balance of trade deficit? How does that hurt us here locally, for instance?
Well, basically it means we are importing a lot more goods and services than we're exporting. And so when the United States balance of trade is in deficit, where there's tens of billions of dollars more being bought than being sold to other countries, then it puts pressure on our economy. And the pressure can be in the form of pressure for lower wages so that our goods can compete more readily with the goods that are being brought in from places like China. It can also put the economy into a tailspin. We've been buffeted from that in part because countries like China and Saudi Arabia and others are buying U.S. bonds. So they're, in a sense, they're helping to keep our economy afloat. A lot of countries use the dollar as their currency of choice in international trade, which helps keep it, more valuable than it would be if you just looked at, how much we're hemorrhaging in terms of cash because of the balance of trade deficit. And so, it's been a bad trend so far, but it could become much worse if countries like China or Saudi Arabia decide they're going to park their money in Europe instead of here, if countries decide the euro is just as attractive a currency as the dollar. I think we would feel the impacts of the trade deficit even more so than we do now.
They can't really do that. Isn't that one of the things that the people running things that count on is that no matter how bad things get here, that they can't decide to let either the dollar sink or the value of the dollar sink or to ignore our economy? Because if the United States wound up like, say, Japan in the 80s and the 90s, that would wreak havoc on the entire world economy. And it's unclear who has who over a barrel.
Right. I mean, it's like playing chicken, because it's true. If obviously one of the reasons we have the deficit in trade is because we're a big market for a lot of countries. And so if those countries see our economy in terms of buying power going down and down and down, then they lose that market, then their economies are hurting. So I think some of these countries, like China and Saudi Arabia and others, feel like, well, they don't really want the wheels to fall off the U.S. economy, and therefore they are, parking some of their money here for partly that reason, because it's, you know, we have, even with the difficulties we have, we are the largest economy in the world.
Are there mainstream economists that are worried about it? Are they, I mean, we see it, Paul Krugman in the New York Times, and I don't mean to put you outside of the mainstream, Bill Hartung, but are there the kind of among the elite? Is there worry there as well?
Well, I think some traditional economists who are concerned about sort of the fiscal soundness of the situation have had concerns, but a lot of the economics profession is politicized now, especially at the top levels. They want jobs in government. They want to be pundits. They want to be within the mainstream understandings of things. And I think, as you said, nobody wants to be a downer. I mean, you know, everybody wants to have something positive to say. And so there's not that many economists willing to really talk about some of these deep structural problems that are developing in our economy that really need to be addressed very forcefully if we're not going to have a kind of continuing decline of our standard of living.
Yeah, this is kind of like a footnote to it all, but there was some thought that what sealed Saddam Hussein's fate, and there's a lot of elements, obviously, that led to the decision and the push to invade a country that actually had no capacity to harm us, but that there was the threat of Saddam Hussein to stop trading in petrodollars and go to petro-euros. Is that does that have any validity?
Well, you know, I've heard about that. I don't think it would be the only reason, but certainly the whole issue of oil and how oil is handled was an important factor in this war. I mean, if Saddam Hussein was torturing and killing people and even maybe developing some weapons and, you know, their main export was pistachio nuts or something, the U.S. wouldn't have sent troops in there. But I think they want a government there that's pliable when it comes to oil, that gives ideally preferred access to the United States, that produces at levels that the United States thinks makes sense and so forth. So obviously, if Saddam Hussein was going to, dramatically change the terms of trade for the United States in oil by switching to denominating it in euros instead of dollars, that would be just the kind of thing that they went to war to prevent. But whether that was the thing uppermost in their mind, I couldn't say.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Bill Hartung has been our guest. He's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. Pardon me, and it's worldpolicy.org. Is that for the average person to look at, or is that kind of a technical site?
No, we have a lot of op-eds, and we try to write as clearly as possible. So I think we found a lot of people that find it very useful, even though they're not by any means, policy experts in their everyday life.
Well, thank you so much for being with me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you.
This is WRIF.com.
The
lowdown on the hottest concerts in town are only a click away with a singular wireless concert connection. Log on to the concerts page right now at WRIF.com to find out where your favorite bands are appearing live in concert across the Motor City. Keep it right here on the Riff for your chance to text in to win tickets, backstage passes, autographed rock merchandise, and more exclusively on your singular wireless phone. The singular wireless concert connection from Singular Wireless, raising the bar at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. Rocks.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. You know, I suspect not many of you listening are up to speed on the latest news about Venezuela. It just doesn't make it into the headlines. It doesn't, it's not top on the cable news or anything like that. But there's some very, very important, very, very interesting things going on. I'm looking here at the December 5th New York Times. The headline is Chavez, and I hope most of you know that's the president of Venezuela, Chavez's grip tightens as rivals boycott vote. Well, what's it all about? When I want to find out what's happening in Latin America, I talk to Larry Burns. Larry Burns is the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs. He's been a guest on the Peter Werby Show before and from Washington. A pleasure to welcome him back. Larry Burns, hi.
Peter, I'm here.
So I wrote the New York Times and talked to him about some of the language that they use. They have a public editor, as you know, and you can actually complain. And I don't know whether it was me or me and lots of people, because they would always use, you know, leftist government, autocratic ruler, mercurial strongman. But here in the headline, it's Chavez's grip tightens as rivals boycott vote. Well, it's like Chavez with his hand on the throat of Venezuela. What really happened on Sunday in Venezuela?
Well, Chavez's grip on Venezuela certainly tightened, if you mean by that he achieved a 100% electoral victory because the opposition dropped out of the race. In fact, they dropped out of the race a week or so ago. And I think it's a near universal interpretation at this point that the reason why they dropped out is because they wanted to spare themselves a humiliating defeat. And there's a lot of history behind this, but basically the traditional political parties in the country, which were the Christian Democratic and the Social Democratic parties, they alternated in power. There was almost a kind of an agreement that they had. And both of them specialized not in good governance, but in cronyism and venality. Those parties were so discredited that today they are only getting, in the last election, they got like 3% of the vote or 4% of the vote, and that's in some of the latest polls. So they had almost no popularity, and it was likely, although not a certitude, it was likely that Chavez would have won by a 2/3 majority.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have enabled him to move ahead on constitutional reforms. And of course, there is a certain worrisome element there, because Chavez is basically a very decent man and a very kind man, and certainly is not, there's nothing approaching in Venezuela the kind of thing we saw in Argentina and Chile and Uruguay and all those other countries during the 1980s when they killed a lot of people. There's no killing in Venezuela. There's no jailing in Venezuela. The media is, I would say, 85% in the hands of the opposition. And they really, there's no pretense at objective journalism today in Venezuela. It all has to do with maneuvers against Chavez. So, for example...
Well, wait a minute, Larry Burns, let me just interrupt you. Maybe we ought to set the stage even a little better. I mean, people may be even scratching their heads because, like I said, I don't think people pay attention too much to what's happening in Venezuela, and they quickly can conceive of him in the long line of caudillos, the strongmen of Latin countries, and he's referred, as I said earlier, he's constantly referred to as this leftist friend of Castro. He's a strong man. He's autocratic, maybe just go back a few years and talk about how he got into power and how he currently rules. I mean, we don't talk about Bush currently ruling, but that's often applied to Chavez and people outside of the United States.
Chavez staged an attempted coup a number of years ago, and against the government of Carlos Andres Perez, who was a corrupt president of Venezuela at the time, a social democrat, and a man I happen to know a bit. And Chavez then spent some time in jail and then went into exile. He returned, and in an election in 1998, he won by a decisive victory, again coming after the presidency of Carlos Andres Perez. And Chavez then proceeded to revalidate his constitutional victory by staging three or four additional elections, all of which he won, some of them by declining majorities, but all of them by a very healthy percentage. And he at first did not institute radical reforms, but in the past year or two, he has been putting into effect a somewhat bold land reform program, but certainly nothing to compare to the Homestead Act of 1867. And
In this country.
In this country.
Yeah.
And his reforms were of the New Deal persuasion rather than of anything akin to Karl Marx. Now, because of his friendship with Fidel Castro, who he looked upon as kind of a great teacher, and also the fact that he was a real globalist. He already had a lot of experience at this because as Latin America's only member of OPEC, the oil cartel, he regularly traveled around the world meeting all these people in sort of Saddam in Iraq and also in Libya.
But Larry, you're not, I mean, on one hand, it doesn't sound like you're selling him very well. A friend of Castro, Gaddafi, Saddam, I mean.
Well, what I'm saying here is that he did everything that was abhorrent to the United States.
Oh, okay.
The only thing was that he was his own guy. He was a constitutionalist. He respected the law. He respected the value of life. He was not particularly, when there was an attempted coup against him in 2002, he was not vindictive, did not slam down or jail. After all, these people had committed treason and sedition and could have been locked up, and the faction of the army that rebelled against him could have been shot. He could have been court-martialed, but he did none of these things. It is true that he's a very controversial figure, that he's a very confrontational figure, that he tends to confront too many enemies at the same time, the church, the professionals, business class.
The U.S., too.
It's largely because these people had never really acknowledged any interest or took any observance of the dominant portion of the population, which is poor. So the poor are solidly behind Chavez. They represent perhaps 65-70% of the population, and a dwindling number of the middle class are very much alienated by Chavez. And would love to see the United States come in and trigger a coup against the against Chavez. Chavez, of course, in recent months and in the last year or two, he's become a very important hemispheric leader. And he's been engaging in what we call petrodiplomacy. He's been using the billions of dollars in unanticipated revenue that he's been getting from oil. And Venezuela is the fifth largest producer in the world.
And one of the major suppliers to the U.S.
And one of the major, of course, the Citgo. The 13,000 Citgo stations or franchise stations that belong to Chavez, to Venezuela. So He today is a very formidable figure for the United States to deal with, and Washington really spends a lot of time trying to hatch plots against him to reduce his standing amidst other Latin American leaders, always raising the subject about what are we going to do about Chavez. And he's this seems to even stir up more excitement in him because he loves a good fight.
Yeah, and he refers to Bush as a genocidal madman and stuff like that.
And Mr. Danger.
Mr. Danger. Well,
he said it last night on the radio. He said, Mr. Danger.
Larry Burns is my guest. He's the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs. It's a great site for understanding what's happening in Latin America. It's COHA.org, COHA.org. Now, when you said he's that the Americans, our government, is often trying to, I forgot what your exact phrase is, but essentially gain allies against him, he's got quite a bit of support among other countries in Latin America, at least particularly in South America. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct. First of all, months ago, he was at 70% popularity domestically in Venezuelan polls. I would say his popularity has somewhat declined because of the fact that he has neglected dealing with bureaucracies, that is the plight of too much bureaucracy in the country. And he, of course, inherited the civil service that was installed under the previous presidents, the previous corrupt presidents, and these civil servants don't have particularly warm feelings towards Chavez. They endure him, but certainly don't like him. And they do nothing to expedite the effective government of the country. It would be nice if Chavez perhaps made fewer speeches and saw himself less as a intergalactic figure and spent more time, making the trains run on time.
Faye, but you mentioned petrodiplomacy. Talk about how he's, I know, for instance, isn't it gasoline like 10 cents a gallon? And
well, not only that, but he intends to ship some of it, fuel oil, to the Bronx and to Boston and to other conceivably other locations in the United States that suffer from high fuel prices, and which neither the Clinton or Bush administration adequately addressed the plight of these people. Now, whether Chavez has done this to tweak Washington's nose or to generate a kind of nervous giggle from the Bush presidency, he also offered fuel aid to New Orleans, but the United States politely declined that.
Wait a minute. Let's go back over this just to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about. The Venezuelan government, through its CITGO distributors in the United States, is going to be delivering, in fact, I think has already begun in the Boston area, to delivering fuel oil, which many people, particularly in the Northeast, heat by, and the cost has skyrocketed. So he is delivering it at, a 40% discount.
Yes,
now,
yes,
some
yes,
of the
yes.
news reports say that he's doing this to irritate Bush. Now, that's going a pretty long way. You may have seen, I suspect, the full-page ad from CITGO talking about this. Did you see that the other day in the Times?
I didn't see that ad.
Okay.
But I would say that it's probably a mixed answer to that. Certainly, the humor and the drama of a so-called developing country coming to the rescue of the United States is somewhat a jocose moment.
But it's also disgraceful.
It's also, of course,
disgraceful on our part.
A desperate need.
Yeah, and what I meant is that it's disgraceful that the wealthiest country in the world actually has to receive the poor, there's so many, has to receive aid from, as you say, a developing country. The ad, the CITGO ad, essentially said this isn't about politics, this is humanitarian. Now, you're right. I mean, maybe in some depth of Chavez's heart, he's thinking, boy, I'm really sticking it to the gringo del Norte, right?
I'm sure he's thinking that,
but
that's probably not his primary motivation.
No. Well, talk a little about the Caribbean, too, because that is, I don't think he's getting much of a chuckle out of sending the oil, discounted oil, around the Caribbean.
Well, he's doing that, and, of course, there's a significant political payoff there, because a number of the Caribbean islands belong to CARICOM, the Caribbean Union of English-speaking islands, Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, and so forth. They're very appreciative of the 14 governments in the area. 13 signed up with Chavez to receive this fuel. And there again, these are islands with very straitened economies and certainly appreciate the help. Now, Chavez wouldn't have been able to do this if the price of oil hadn't spiked and he had an oil premium on his hands that was unanticipated, and so he was able to reallocate those funds to domestic programs for the poor. He brought over, I think, the total is 17,000 Cuban health workers, the majority of them doctors, to the poor neighborhoods in Caracas, some of whom had never seen. That is, they have never seen a doctor come in that neighborhood, and these Cuban doctors would live in these areas and provide real services. Now, to Washington, anything connected to Cuba is anathema, and for a guy like Chavez, who professes his friendship for Castro, and has done a great deal. That is, Venezuela and recent Chinese investments in a major nickel plant in Cuba have more than replaced the Soviet aid that Cuba used to get during the years of the Soviet bloc's existence. And the Cuban economy has grown anywhere from 6 to 9% this past year.
Oh, that's amazing.
They also just announced that they are buying $17 million in grain products from Nebraska, and the governor and the whole series of Nebraska officials traveled over to Cuba to meet with Castro. So what we have here is that an attempt by a number of Latin American countries, not just Venezuela, to open things up, to revisit ancient problems. After all, the U.S. embargo of Cuba goes back to 1961. That's almost 50 years.
That's amazing.
And of course, Washington never revisits, never reconsiders. So what has happened is that by maintaining an essentially sterile and fallow policy of hostility and odium, you want to hurt Venezuela, you want to hurt Cuba. That is, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld and Secretary of State Rice and Bush himself all accuse Venezuela of destabilizing other Latin American countries. Now,
well, they do say that frequently, but then the only thing that they ever charge is that Venezuela is aiding the Colombian guerrillas with arms. I mean,
that's right. That is a charge, incidentally, that the Colombian president, the conservative president Uribe, who is also receiving subsidized oil from Venezuela, he doesn't accuse Venezuela of aiding the guerrillas. And in fact, Venezuela said, look, you know, we have a border here between Venezuela and Colombia. It can be defended upon by both sides. Don't count on us to take on the expenditure of fortifying that line. Mm-hmm. Let the Colombian soldiers also patrol their side of the border if they're worried about guerrillas going back and forth.
You know, Larry Burns, as I mentioned before our show, I'm going to Venezuela for the World Social Forum at the end of January. And what am I going to find, not so much at the big gatherings, but what sort of country is it? On one hand, I've seen films, looks like a modern country. Then you see these, you know, very typical for Latin America, these sort of slums. And I mean, you've been to Venezuela, am I correct, several times?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So I mean, it's kind of hard to say, what are your, like if someone said to me, what are your impressions of Los Angeles? I'd go, so I mean, it's a difficult question, but any shorthand or any impressions that would be valuable to me?
Well, I'll try. The wealthy neighborhoods are absolutely indistinguishable from the best that U.S. suburbia has to offer. The downtown has become rather shabby.
This is Caracas.
Caracas.
Yeah.
In Latin America, it is usually the capital city draws all of the population. And so these are very large cities, and usually people of affluence tend to live in major cities like Caracas. And investment is declining in the country because of the fact that the middle class, the business class of the country is not particularly happy about Chavez being there. In fact, Chavez, by winning, by the opposition sort of committing this lunatic act of pulling out of the election, an election that had been validated by both the EU and the OAS, the regional organization, as well as the Carter Center, as being everything was fair and everything was ready to be set. The opposition came out with an absolutely transparently hypocritical explanation of why they're dropping out, because they felt they couldn't trust the machinery, the electoral machinery, or the electoral commission. But all of those
are the kind of machines we use here,
exactly,
by the way.
And
yeah,
they were all validated.
Yeah.
And the electoral commission made major concessions to the opposition, but the opposition couldn't be placated. It insisted on pulling out because their strategy, and it seems to almost be working now, because I looked at a number of newspaper editorials who spoke about the low turnout, which is around 25%, and the fact that Chavez won every seat, except 20 or 30 seats that his allies won.
You know, in Detroit,
it's no surprise.
In Detroit, Larry, sometimes I remember off-year elections where Detroit turnout was as low as 17%. So,
right.
I mean, that's not good, but that's what it is.
Right. And the fact is that there in many elections sponsored by the United States, the voter turnout has been very low. But in the case of Venezuela, of course it was low. Why should someone go and vote when there's nothing at stake? That is, if the opposition pulls out of the electoral process, and only pro-Chavez people are going to go down to the poll to vote. A lot of them said, look, Chavez is going to win. That's great. But there's no need for us to vote, no need for us to walk 2 miles to a polling station where it's in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Slam dunk, as the CIA head would say. But this is exactly the scenario that the opposition had in mind. It was for people to say that the Bush administration, which has not really said very much up to this point, and we're watching when it's going to start talking, but it was a clear effort to generate some sympathetic public opinion outside of Venezuela as well as inside of Venezuela.
Larry, we are completely out of time. You are a wealth of information, much of it which appears on your website, COHA.org, COHA.org.
Remember, Peter, call me before you go to Venezuela. I'll give you names.
I'll talk to you right after we say goodbye here. Larry Burns is director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs. A lot more on his site. Larry Burns, as usual, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter.
This is WRIM.com.
Tired of expensive phone bills? Standard phone service can cost a minimum of $30. And for the unlimited packages, it's anywhere from $40 to $70. After adding all the taxes and fees, the question is it really worth it? I'd like to introduce you to Corecom's new product, Voice over Internet Protocol, or simply VoIP. This innovation allows you to talk to anyone around the world by using your broadband internet connection. With its advanced features, VoIP is revolutionizing telephone service as we know it today. Even more exciting is that this can all be done at a fraction of the price of traditional phone service. Why would you pay more when you can pay less? If you've got high-speed internet access, Corecom can offer you a package for as low as $15.99 per month. When was the last time your phone company offered you any package options that low? As an added bonus, if you call within the next 10 minutes, Corecom will throw in 1 month free. All you have to do is call 1-866-680-CORE. That's 1-866-680-CORE. Call now and mention promotion code WRIF. Or if you register online, type in promotion code WRIF to get your free month. Corecom, revolutionizing phone service one call at a time.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
Hi, this is Colleen McDonald, president of Holiday Automotive Group. You know us as Holiday Chevrolet in Farmington Hills, Livonia Chrysler Jeep in Livonia, and Century Dodge in Taylor. We know it's never fun to have to bring your car in for service, and worse yet, if you've been in an accident. But rest assured, our service staff is here and ready to help you. To make an appointment, go online at weloveholiday.com. It's that easy.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
We also have special discounts if you need body work on your vehicle and accept all insurance companies. Call us at 866-867-0909 for more information. We're the Holiday Automotive Group. We've got you covered from Downriver to Oakland County.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Like what you hear on the Riff, then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best Riff Rock.
The way you want it.
Double Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
and broadcasting in crystal clear HD radio.
What do you think of that?
That's neat. Kind of like Vegas.
101.1
WRIF. Everything that rocks.
The world is a vampire.